Morning, members. This is Siyabonginkele Mthonjeni, the committee secretary. Morning with the department as well, to the NPA. The chairperson is joining. Okay, there we go.
Thank you very much. Good morning to everybody. Good morning to the NTPP and to your team.
Good morning.
There is an echo there.
Yes. Good morning. Recording in progress.
Good morning, Minister Lamola and Deputy Minister John Jeffrey.
It is down.
I'm not sure whether it's the Minister or the NTPP.
Sorry, Chair. See, I think it's us. We are working. My sound is down. Because we have one or two laptops. I think we're good now. Thank you. Sorry about that.
No, I think it's a combination of both yourself and the minister. I think the minister also has connection problems. Minister, we don't seem to be getting you properly. Do you perhaps have a connection problem?
Yeah, good morning, Chairperson. Looks like where I am, there is a connection problem, but cuts off and comes back.
No, now we are clear.
Oh, okay.
We can see you are nice and bright.
No, that's my thing.
Thank you. We also understand that you asked to be released so that you can go to cabinet after your presentations. I think we wrote a letter both to yourself and to the National Director of Public Prosecutions to address two issues. One, the first one is the resignation of the head of the IT. And the second one is the failure to meet the deadline for the credit 4. Since Minister, you want to be released earlier, maybe it will be better for you to start to present before we allow the NTPP. We seem to have lost the minister again. Committee Secretary, can you advise the minister that we have lost him?
No, Chair.
members, in the event we can't get hold of the minister, will we just proceed with the NDPP alone, or we must wait for the minister until we find him? Can I get guidance?
Yes,
I'm back. Oh, you are back. Thank you very much, Minister.
I will try to switch off my video. Hopefully, maybe it will work. The network.
Okay. Okay. So you can proceed, Minister.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, firstly, for inviting us to this briefing. As I have sent my apology, there is a cabinet meeting today that will start now at 10. So I will request to be released at 10 because I also have an item that I present in the cabinet meeting. But I have attended, I will be attending up until 10 with the permission of if the chairperson does and the committee does give me permission to be here up until that time, but to also introduce the subject, including the National Director of Public Prosecution and her senior legal team, a senior team that is here. I'm also with the Deputy Minister, Mr. John Jeffrey, with me. Hopefully, he will be able to continue. We are here, Chairperson, on the invite on two issues that you have given us in the letter. The first one is the issue that relates to the ID. What I will just state briefly with regard to the ID that from our side as a department, there has been challenges, but we have tried our best to give the necessary support for the establishment of the ID as per the directive of the president after he has established the ID in terms of the NPA Act. And we have done so. Also, the DPCI has Chairperson, I think I am on the wrong side. Maybe let me go back to the ID. I was now on the TRC Chairperson. I just want to go to the ID in terms of the support that the investigative directorate was established by the president in March 2019 in terms of a proclamation 20 of 2019 and section 7 of the NPA Act. The directorate was set up to investigate common law offenses, including fraud, forgery, uterine theft, and any offense involving dishonesty. The directorate is also required to attend to statutory offenses like corruption, crime-related organized crime, money laundering, and various offenses related to corruption in the public service. In addition, the directorate investigates any unlawful activities relating to serious high-profile or complex corruption, including but not limited to offenses or criminal or unlawful activities arising from the following commissions and inquiries: the Zondo Commission of Inquiry, the Nugget Commission of Inquiry into Tax Administration and Governance by SARS, the Mpati Commission of Inquiry into Allegations of Impropriety Regarding the Public Investment Corporation, and other serious high-profile or complex corruption cases referred to the directorate by the National Director. Upon my appointment, honorable members, as minister, I was briefed on the institutional requirements of the NPA and the investigative directorate. This left me with no doubt in mind that our task will be a difficult one, but not insurmountable. Our task will be that of rebuilding the NPA and helping the institution to rebuild and creating a new institution with capacity to restore the public confidence in our prosecution and the criminal justice system. As we sit here, the NPA has been able to seize the positions at senior management level. The investigative directorate has been assisted to have personnel who are skilled in digital forensics, amongst others. The IB has also been assisted to have their own building, which they've recently acquired after a period, the chairperson, of about a year or two of back and forth between us and the Department of Public Works and the challenges that comes with the procurement of government buildings. But finally, they do have. And we have also amended the terms of reference of the Commission of Inquiry to assist in helping the investigative directorate. There's also a transitional process in terms of the digital information and also in terms of some of the personnel at the State Capture Commission for the auditing, which was still within our purview, but also to liaise with the Department of Public Service and Administration on issues that relate to the personnel of IDs, that there's also issues that relate to budgeting that is within the PBU, also of the National Treasurer. So that is the support that we've continued to provide to the ID. And I will, with your permission, Chairperson, request that the details of the issue that relates to the designation of the Special Director, Advocate Damian Gronjem, I will leave that to the province of the National Director of Public Prosecution to brief the committee. The second issue, Chairperson, that you have called us to come here about is the issue of the TRC matters. And that is where I had erroneously started in. With regard to the TRC matters, the DPCI has appointed the four investigators to deal exclusively with the TRC cases. The NPA obtained a special approval from the Department of Public Service and Administration to have 23 prosecutors dedicated to the TRC cases that are marked to be prosecuted within a period of 3 years. I would like to address this notion of referral and so forth, but I think this let me leave it to the
We can't hear you, Minister.
To the NPA. I can also add is the case that relates to that approached me to request the president to appoint an investigative judge on the issues of interference by the executive in terms of the investigation into the TRC. And we also in turn approached the retired Justice O'Regan to help us with the investigation. Unfortunately, she declined the request because she said she is already back with the academic work that she's involved in. I think it's in the grade 13. As you are aware, she's a very much who helped us. At the early, she became the judge that was helping us with data. So she's always available to help and assist when possible. But this time she said it will be a tall order for her because she wants to continue with the academic work that she's supposed to pursue. So we are currently in discussion with another retired judge that I will request not to disclose up until Chairperson, we have concluded the terms of reference and agreement with the judge that he will be the one, and the president has confirmed the appointment. Chairperson, I think that is where I can end the matter, and hopefully we will be able to do the appointment before the the end of the year, so that at the beginning of the year, the judge can start the work. Maybe the other issue I could add with regards to the resignation of the special director is that there is a process of routing the memo to us, and also we will then route the memo to the appointing authority, who is the president, with regards to her vacating the office. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Members, are there any questions to the Minister before he leaves? Honorable Dennis Breitenbach, followed by Honorable Horn in that order. Honorable Hanif Hendricks will also follow. Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to everybody.
Morning, Honorable Breitenbach.
Honorable Minister, you say that there were challenges with regards to the Investigative Directorate. You tried your best to address these. Could you be a little more specific, please? What precisely were the challenges? And what did you do to address them? You add, rather glibly I must add, that they have now moved into their own building and it took a bit of time of toing and froing. A year or two, you say. Well, it's not a year or two, it's actually 2.8 years, nearly three. Are you seriously suggesting that two, perhaps three cabinet ministers can't get together and sort out a building for a unit that was launched with great fanfare in the press as the answer to corruption in South Africa, gave all South Africa, you told us that it was going to sort out corruption in South Africa, that it was supposed to give all South Africans hope that corruption would now be addressed. Are you seriously suggesting, Minister, that two, maybe three cabinet ministers couldn't get together and sort this out in less than 2.5, nearly 3 years? One building. And then you say you've got them suitable accommodation. What is that accommodation? How is it suitable and what makes it special? Why was it so difficult? You say this unit was supposed to restore public confidence, but it hasn't. It's eroded public confidence. It's done very little, with the greatest of respect, in the 2.8 years. I'm sure that a lot of groundwork has been done. I'm sure that a lot of building has been done. I'm sure that a lot of putting together processes has been done. But the public don't really want to hear that, and they don't want to see it. They want to see results. They want to see people in court and consequences for actions. So by the admission of the National Director, the ID has not taken one case to court in 2.8 years. How is this going to restore public confidence? Could you just address that for me, please, Mr. Minister?
Thank you very much.
You say the ID was assisted with personnel. How was it assisted with personnel? Could you be more specific? You say it has some access to digital forensic skills. What access to digital forensic skills does it have? And how has the department assisted with this? And then as far as the TRC prosecutions are concerned, you say the DPCI has made four investigations. I'm sorry, I heard you say four. I may be wrong. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. But four investigators, quite frankly, it doesn't matter how good they are, and it doesn't matter if they work 24 hours a day, they can even work 25. Four investigators is not sufficient.
34, not four.
34. Okay, 34. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And 23 prosecutors, is that correct?
Yes.
I see. That's a very bad ratio, Mr. Minister. I'm sure you know that, and I'm sure that anybody else who knows anything about prosecutions can tell you that. Very bad ratio. You need way more investigators than prosecutors. Not 10 more. Way more. One prosecutor can deal with matters from 3 or 4 or 5 investigators at a time. Not one. So it's not enough. Poorly capacitated. When precisely were you approached to appoint an investigating judge? If you could just give us a timeline there, please. And as we all know, there are so many retired judges in South Africa, all very competent. I can't imagine what the holdup is. It's a pity that Justice O'Regan is not available, but there are many others. So I can't imagine what the holdup is. If you could just address that in a little more detail, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Horn. I think at the rate at which we are going, maybe some of the answers would be responded to by the DM and the MDPP, because we are now left with 9 minutes. Honorable Horn?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'll try and be quick, but maybe we must say we hope the Minister join the Cabinet in person, because if he's to present there and this is the type of connection he has, I think the Cabinet's also not going to go forward. Be that as it may, Chair, my comments or questions rather also will turn, and I'll try and limit it to one, around the input the Minister gives here today, which is more or less in the same vein as the input he's given over the last months. And the word he constantly uses, support, he's given the investigative directorate. And that's a very worrying thing, because if one looks at his constitutional responsibility, he has what the Constitution calls final responsibility for the NPA. That would mean he's our political project manager responsible for the NPA. And the Minister must explain to us why he believes that to react and to give support, he in any way can claim that he's discharging his duties in respect of the NPA. If one adds to that further that he's the poster, I don't want to say poster boy, but the poster model of this government's fight against corruption, the Minister must explain to us how he has exercised his duties and functions in terms of the NPA Act and its authority that's given to him to ask for decisions, to question decisions. And has the Minister at some stage over the last period since the investigative directorate has been set up, sat around a table with this directorate and taken this directorate to task about A, the slow pace at which matters were progressing, and then B, given the fact that we now see that the head of this directorate is vacating office, what has the minister done to get to the root of the dysfunctionality and the slow pace of getting this investigative directorate to function? And what has the minister done to ensure that this investigative directorate becomes functional? Not to support, because to support, Chair, with the greatest of respect, can mean that I ultimately, as is unfortunately the custom in this country, 3 months or 4 months or 6 months down the line of having been alerted to an issue, I react to it just so that I cannot be accused of frustrating the efforts of this directorate. So what I want to hear from the Minister is, what has he done in a proactive manner since it has become very public knowledge that this investigative directorate is really struggling to get where we want them to be? What has he done to discharge of his responsibilities to be the final member of the executive responsible for the NPA? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Horn. Honorable Hendricks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, we would like to know if the Minister is hampered by decisions taken at CODESA not to prosecute the TRC cases. He needs to be honest with the nation. And also, the problem seems to be Treasury. They seem to be complicit. They may prevent the Minister from carrying out his mandate by not throwing resources and monies behind them. We like to hear, you know, what the Minister has to say. And obviously, when the investigative judge is appointed, we will get more answers. Lastly, Honorable Chair, there are many families who have names in the box of those that might need to be convicted of crimes. And, is the Minister prepared to come up with a list, especially of those cases where families have got names in the box to say that they are persons of interest, and if possible, at least get them to appear in court while this process is taking place, because people are dying and the evidence is needed, and this is a betrayal of the governing party and a betrayal of Archbishop Tutu and his commission.
I know that the official opposition is very keen to deal with corruption cases, but those cases must stand in the queue. The TRC cases must get prominent. How does the minister feel about that? Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hendricks. Honourable Masego Chaila.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister and the team, colleagues. Chairperson, I only have two, if not three, questions for the Minister. Let me just appreciate first the work that has been done up to this far. Though there's a lot that still has to be done without waste of time, because the minister is going. The first one, Minister, it is the issue as the head of e-justice. I think you would understand the impatience and the feeling of the families if maybe you put yourself into their position, especially those families of the TRC cases. There has been a lot of delay on this, and the families and the public has lost confidence on justice because of these cases. You understand that the people who are involved in these cases, Minister, they are dying one by one. And at the end, we won't get to the truth. So this lead me to my question of wanting to know exactly what is the criteria that the department is using in choosing these so-called serious cases. Chairperson, if maybe the minister can give us, because we did ask this question at some point. My point, Chair, is that there is this resignation now of the ID head, and these cases are supposed to be dealt with in that directorate, if I'm not mistaken. Now we are the time that is against us in terms of dealing with these issues, Chairperson. Lastly, I want to know from the minister, these investigators that they have deployed, that they are going to work on these cases, we want to know from the minister, when can we expect a progress, a tangible progress, Chairperson, particularly on these issues, the TRC. This issue of TRC, it's of yesterday. We want to see progress, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sart.
Thank you, Chair. Very briefly, I know the Minister's leaving, so I presume others might also respond, but we do know that the Zondo Commission will be giving its report at the end of December, and it is expected that it will, without preempting, but the NPA has acknowledged that they expect an avalanche of work from the Commission's report. Will the Minister, given what's happened with the ID and given some of the capacity constraints and that the NPA, the ID have pointed out, will the Minister ensure that the NPA is properly capacitated to do the required work? And then as far as the TRC is concerned and the appointment of a retired judge, when is it, whilst we're not going to ask about the particular person, but how long is that process going to take? Is there a time frame when that is expected? I'm not talking about the appointment, but I'm talking about when the judge would be expected to complete his report. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Over to you, Minister. I know it's 10 o'clock. Minister Lamola, are you still there?
Good morning, Chair. It seems like we have lost the minister.
Deputy Minister, can you come in? Sorry, maybe let me just check.
Chair.
Members, I'm just informed that the minister was disconnected. They are trying to reconnect him. Maybe let's just wait a minute or so. Honorable Janji, you had raised your hand.
Yes, Chair. No, I was going to. If he was just, I mean, connected and left, but he's saying he's coming back, because I would have suggested that perhaps we don't go to Deputy Minister John Jeffrey, but we get the entire presentation, including from the NDPP, and then we get into a discussion, because this exercise of in a rush throwing things at the minister is not helpful, Chair. It's really, we've not called this meeting for this kind of jab kind of thing. We just need to get to the real issues. And I think it's going to be important that when we get into a discussion, everything has been put on the table, including the NDPP.
Okay. So if he does not come back, let's wait for a few minutes. If he does not come back, we'll go to the NDPP and then we take the discussion. The minister.
I'm back, Jefferson.
Okay, Minister. I think you had all the questions.
Hopefully, my network won't let me down again, Chairperson. Unfortunately, I did not hear some of the questions, but I heard some of them. And hopefully, I will do justice to the ones that I have heard. Chair, it's unfortunate that it seems that from the first questions, the honorable members did not really call me here to get clarity and to take the institution forward, but they've called me here for some kind of politicking from Honorable Bredenbach, Honorable Horn, which really is not going to help the country on this matter. We must put the what is the facts on the table and deal with facts. This thing of just lamenting and bashing is not helpful to our democracy. There is no institution in this country that can be built in one day. The ID, when I arrived, was in the process of being built after the appointment by the president. And we did everything that we could to provide the support. And I stated what support we've done, which included to engage with the Department of Public Service to give certain deviations, which are not easy, including to appoint and allow Section 38 appointments for the ID, and to ensure that whatever that it does, it is in compliance with the Department of Public Service regulations, and including the gap check that you will have seen, that has been giving them the necessary support in terms of issues that relate to human resource, which we have done. And over this period of years, the number of staff of the ID has increased gradually because of that work that has been happening. And with regards to build the digital forensic lab of the Zondo, it is in the process of being migrated, the ISIS and the National Treasure. So there's been engagement amongst all these departments. And with regards to appointments of investigators, the DPCI was really struggling to get suitable qualified investigators that would help the ID. So we had to do whatever limited resources. But we're constantly trying to get more investigators with the DPCI to help the work of the ID. And there was no real base functionality. It was a structure that was being built. It has been resourced, but we can admit that it has not really been able to operate optimally, but was able to oppose to make a significant impact. And this is not unusual on an institution that deals with complex matters as the ones that the ID is supposed to deal with. From time to time, we requested reports, engaged with the national director, and where necessary, with the head of the ID to get progress, to provide reports, and also to provide a political oversight as in terms of the of the NPA Act. With regard to the building, Chairperson, I hear Honorable Breitenbach saying three ministers failed to meet and procure a building. If we did that, Honorable Breitenbach or Chairperson procured the building as ministers, you would have called us here now that the ministers are interfering in procurement of buildings. But we instructed the DG of Justice, the NPA administration, to sit together, including with National Treasury and all the relevant stakeholders, to ensure that the building is procured within a limited period of time. And it is not 3 years, as Honorable Breitenbach is incorrectly alluding. It's less than 2 years, because as the institution was starting, there was not a lot of staff that needed the building. It is as the institution was building up, having human resource numbers increasing to about 100, where the need for a building arose. And that is less than 2 years. And you will remember, Honorable Chairperson, as the numbers were increasing and they now started to need a building, COVID-19 struck, which meant that they now had to work from home. So there was no, at that time, real need for a building. But we continued to say they must be helped to get a building, which we did through the relevant accounting officers, who, in terms of the PFMA, can be responsible for procurement. And I'm definitely sure, Honorable Chairperson, that the Honorable Members Vaughan and Honorable Member Breitenbach knows that the ministers cannot procure building. It is only the accounting office. And we put the pressure, the national pressure, to the relevant officials but we're not going to procure a building by own behalf to expect the minister to procure a building. With regards to the TRC, there is a new dedicated capacity, Honorable Chairperson, on these matters. As I've said, there have been many reasons why these cases were not given priority in the past, but now there is a focused effort. We must give this new approach. It is time to try to show some results. And the cases will have the direct matters that relate to the cases. The NDPP will be able to clarify in terms of the merits of the case and all that. But also, it is a matter also that needs also investigators from the DPCI, because as I have said earlier on, as you are aware, the NPA cannot just prosecute without the work of investigators. And the question that relates to what have we done to address the NPA corruption, this thing, Honorable Chairperson, is just some kind of immature political grandstanding that I don't expect from Honorable Horn, because we have to work together to build this country. I mean, this kind of labeling is not necessary. Just ask your question whether we are doing our oversight, which we have said we are doing, whether we are giving the support, which we have said we are doing. There's no need to try to be a copycat of the EFF and say there's some poster boy. Honorable Hendricks, are we hampered by Professor? Is that why we are not prosecuting the TRC cases? I am not aware of any CODESA agreement that says there should be no prosecution. The NPA Act is clear where and how they must deal with the prosecutions. And I think they'll be able to provide that information. Honorable Jelle, we understand, indeed we do understand the victims. Impatient, and a week or two ago, I attended the CREDEC 4 Memorial Fest for Kalada, memorial lecture when I was emphasizing with the victims and also gave account of how far is the process and what are the issues with regards to the appointment of the judge on the investigation. And then I did the same when I attended the memorial service of Timoli by accounting to the victims. And we do emphasize, we understand their frustration. And we are hopeful that the process going forward will be helpful to the victims, the families, and to the entire community of South Africa at large to bring some kind of finality and closure. And Honorable Swart, do know that the Zondo Commission, given what has happened to the ID and the capacity constraints of the NPA, will have the NPA have the necessary capacity. Indeed, we have had an engagement with the NDPP to start to prepare for what will come out of the Zondo Commission. And this period, although it will be a setback because of the departure of the head of the ID, but we are hopeful that those that are going to remain will continue with the preparations. Unfortunately, we all don't know what will be contained in the report of the Zondo Commission, but hopefully with the evidence that was given, the institution can be able to have an idea so that it starts to prepare, because we do believe the report might be voluminous, might come up with a lot of complex issues that will need the well-capacitated and resourced ID. Hence, in certain instances, we approve when the NPA come to us to request the Section 38 appointments that helps with the processes that relates to the Zondo commissions or any investigation of a high-profile nature that they are involved in. Honorable Chairperson, those are the questions that I could be able to hear. If I have not heard any, I will apologize, or if the Chairperson remembers, could help me. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Minister. I think it will not be the last engagement we have with you on this matter. I think I will ask the members that we proceed to the presentation by the NDPP and release the Minister.
Agreed, Chair.
Thank you very much, NDPP.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Firstly, I will be guided by you, Honourable Chair. We have been called to report on to the committee on two matters, and that is one, the vacation of office of the investigating director, and the second one is the TRC matter, in particular, the case of the Cradock 4, where the NPA missed the deadline. Should I deal with one and then take questions, or deal with both of them and then take questions at the end? I'll be guided by you, Chair.
When I looked at the presentation, it's not a long one. So I think deal with both of them, and we'll just have a discussion on both of them.
Thank you, Chair. So, Chair, I will start off with the issue of the investigating directorate, and I'm certainly hoping, Chair, that now we move out of the political domain and deal with the technical legal issues that, as the NPA, we need to deal with. And I want to say at the outset, Chair, you know, this is the NPA is such an incredibly important institution, and I say that not as the national director, but I say it as a citizen of this country. And we need to ensure that we strengthen the NPA and rebuild it. And recently, I have acknowledged on Monday the important role of the media in terms of with regard to our constitutional democracy. And some of the facts, regrettably, have been incorrect. Well, some of the reporting has not been factually correct. And so, you know, this really undermines an important pillar of our constitutional democracy. And again, I urge that, you know, we get the facts right and then we report on the facts and we ask questions based on the facts. So, Chair, the issue of the investigating directorate, The imminent departure of Advocate Cronier as the head of the ID has been widely reported in the media. And as you're aware, Chair, on Monday, the 6th of December, I, together with my exco, conducted a media briefing where this matter was, this development was extensively covered. Just to clarify, Chair, that media briefing was not as a result of the resignation of the investigating director. This was something that was planned as part of our ongoing media engagements as an important stakeholder. And it so happened that the resignation was announced before, just before that media briefing. So we dealt with both the work of the NPA as well as that issue. As I said, and Chair, and I emphasize that this is not a crisis, that there has been a lot of good work that has happened in very difficult and challenging circumstances, both a difficult legal framework as well as, a complex institutional context where a lot of work has gone, as I said, under the able leadership, under the guidance of Advocate Cronier, to bring the ID to where it is. And so it is often healthy that you have new leadership to take an organization forward from where it has been brought to by the previous leaders. So there has been engagement with Advocate Cronier pertaining to her vacation of office before the end of the term. And as I said, Advocate Cronier has indicated her decisions for this, and we understand those decisions. After a very, very challenging startup phase, we need to look forward. The NPA and the ID in particular is critical in terms of dealing with corruption. And as I said, Advocate Cronier leaves the ID well positioned, as she said before this very committee, I think it was two months or so ago, to really deliver important results in the near future. And so I'm confident that the groundwork that has been done really puts the ID, of course, the ID does not have all the resources. And, you know, the Zondo Commission resources are being migrated, and we're still trying to get it to a point where it will have everything that it needs. But whilst we are in this position, it is resourced, it is considerably in this time, and we certainly are poised to make some impact. In just over 2.5 years, the ID is now a reasonably well-established unit within the NPA with over 120 staff, including four dedicated substantive units, two administrative and operation support divisions, a reasonably substantial budget, including a new state-of-the-art building, and we are ready to manage the transition from now until Advocate Cronier leaves, and I'll talk a little bit about that. There's also an important part. We are reaching the end of the Zondo Commission, and you know there's going to be a lot of work, as I said on Monday, an avalanche of work coming our way, and so we need to be ready to ensure that the ID is prepared to deal with those issues. And as I said, we are not going to be able to deal with everything that comes through from the Zondo Commission. We're going to have to really strategically prioritize cases for impact and sequence cases, because we are never going to have all of the resources to deal with all of the issues. I can give a little more detail on some of the resources of the ID, but just to say that as I said, it's 120 staff members. We expected that this will grow to around 200 in 2022. The annual budget of the ID is approximately 107 million, and this is projected to grow in 2022 to about 180 million rand. So we are, you know, the ID has begun the process of onboarding of the Stage Capture Commission resources in order to manage the process of when the report is submitted to the president. Honorable Chair, honorable colleagues, in terms of moving forward, our priority as the NPA is to ensure that the ID, in the short and in the longer term, is ready and able to deliver on its mandate. And this transition phase is going to be managed and led by Deputy National Director Advocate Rabaji Rasitaba, who will support Advocate Cronje and her senior managers during this transition period. The NPA will in parallel start the recruitment process to identify the new head of the ID in close consultation with the minister. The process to appoint a new investigating director will be rigorous in order to ensure that the right person with the right skills is appointed who is able to deliver on this really difficult mandate of the ID. But what is clear, Chair, and I want to emphasize, is there will be no leadership gap. The ID is, as I said, its capacity, it's been capacitated a lot in this time, and there's capable leadership in place that will continue to drive the work of the ID in the coming months. The staff in the ID are committed. We have staff that are dedicated to the ideals of the ID in bringing those responsible for corruption to justice, and that work will continue pending the appointment of the new head. And as I said, Advocate Rabaji Rasitaba will work very closely during the final months in order to ensure that there's a smooth handover process with, as I said, the support and engagement of the senior leadership in the ID. There's the following just a few points that I want to emphasize. The NPA is not in a crisis. It's far from it. The NPA has been steadily building a very, very solid foundation. And I'm confident that we are, in fact, on a very, very solid foundation at this point. Advocate Cronje's resignation and the Exco's decision to approve is a culmination of many, many factors. And I'm not going to discuss this in Parliament. But there has been extensive reporting about the fact that there's been interpersonal relations that affected this. And as I said, in any very, very high stakes, high pressure environment, there's bound to be tensions and professional conflicts. But we work through them. And Advocate Cronje and I both have the interests of the country at heart. And all the decisions we make are in the interests of the country. And the ID is under considerable pressure to perform, and it remains so. But we cannot respond to pressure. We've got to act with a sense of urgency, which is what we're doing, but we cannot respond to pressure because that is when we make mistakes. And we cannot afford to make mistakes in the current climate. As I said, the leadership transitions are normal and often healthy. All organizations have staff turnover, and it's our job to ensure business continuity towards a very clear goal, and that is what we have. If we are not focused on this goal, and if we don't do whatever we need to ensure we are still moving towards that goal, then we are in a crisis. But that is not the case. Advocate Cronje was appointed the head of ID in May 2019, 2 years and 8 months ago. As I said, it's a tough job, it's a tough environment, and it shouldn't come as a surprise that leaders will come and go. And Advocate Cronje has decided to vacate at this point. And as I said, the Exco of the NPA and myself have supported this. This is not a sign of any collapse or crisis in the NPA. It's, as I said, it's healthy when leaders take an organization to a certain point and leave, and then leave it for a new leader with a fresh new energy to pick up from where we are, picking up on all of the good work that has been done. It takes a long time to establish a new entity within any organization, especially within government. Most business and organizational design experts will agree that it would take at least 3 years for a new organization and department to even start breaking even. Structures, staffing, new policies, processes need to be developed. In the case of the ID, a lot of work has gone into this. The Government Technical Advisory Center, GTEC, an agency of National Treasury, which builds public sector capacity to improve governance and to enhance public service delivery, has worked very closely with Advocate Cronje and the ID for just about 2 years. And it's therefore not surprising that, considering all of the work that has been done and all of the work that still needs to be done, that the ID has gotten to this point in about 2.5 years. The NPA has very good dedicated prosecutors, and that is the strength of the NPA. In as much as we do need to build capacity in very specialized areas, and we are working on that, the drive and the dedication of prosecutors is what will get us to achieving our goal. Chair, with regard to the second issue that we were called to report on, and that is the NPA missing the deadline with regard to the so-called Cradock 4 matter. Okay, let me first, before I deal with that specific issue, just sketch a very brief outline with regard to dealing with the TRC matters. Chair, we must recall that TRC matters for various reasons, and Advocate Vusi Pikoli has deposed to an affidavit about the challenges that were faced in the NPA, has for various reasons not received the focus and attention that they needed. That these cases needed. It is critically important for the, as the minister has indicated, for the families of the victims, for the survivors, to receive justice in these matters. And the reality is that up until now, our country as a whole has failed them in terms of bringing and holding accountable those responsible for atrocities that were committed during the apartheid era. And there are various reasons for this. So it was only in around 2017 that their investigations were on paper set to begin. But the reality is that we know that during that time, our institutions had been considerably weakened. The DPCI and the NPA were reeling from years of efforts to undermine and to weaken institutions. So there was no capacity to deal with these cases that require a dedicated focus. And so I took office in 2019, February. And I don't have to go into the context. I mean, it's well known what the position was when I took office. I had a meeting in 2020. I had various meetings with General Rabia, but we increasingly realized that dealing with TRC matters has to be a priority for law enforcement, for the National Prosecuting Authority. It was in 2020 that I had my first meeting, a meeting with General Libya and his team and members of my team to specifically deal with the issue of TRC matters. And we were very clear that we couldn't move on the TRC matters without a dedicated investigative capacity. The NPA does not investigate. And at that time, the TRC cases were still being managed from the national office in the PCLU, the Priority Crimes Litigation Unit, that was seized not only with TRC matters, but was also dealing with terrorism matters and a whole lot of other priority crimes. And there's this very small capacity in the NPA to deal with a whole range of priority crimes, including TRC matters. And so we really implored General Libya, who committed to us that he was going to recruit investigators that would be dedicated to dealing with TRC matters. And likewise, we committed to recruiting prosecutors and getting prosecutors, dedicated prosecutors, to deal with these cases. And so the process of recruitment has not been easy, even in the DPCI. It's taken a while. And so we have, in the meantime, we were trying to deal with the TRC cases, but really without the capacity to deal with it. And it is earlier this year, with Advocate Rodney de Kock also having come on board, that we've been engaging regularly with the families, with the lawyers representing victims, and we realized that it's important for us to have this engagement. We've also, as the NPA, we realize how important it is for the victims and families to be kept informed of what we are doing. And in various parts of the country, the DPPs are doing that. And in fact, we have there's a letter, a couple of letters that we've received that where in a particular case, I recall, the victims of TRC case actually commended and thanked the NPA for having, for addressing these matters and keeping them informed. I know that's just one example, but it's only to give the assurance that this is a really, really important issue for the NPA. And so about, it was earlier this year that we decided, and we did have conversations with the lawyers representing the families, that we were going to create a dedicated capacity within the NPS, that's the National Prosecution Service, under the direct supervision of Advocate de Kock, the Deputy National Director. And what we have done in this time, and together with that, General Labia has recruited dedicated investigators, and they are now deployed in various parts of the country together with these prosecutors that have been recruited. And I have some figures in that regard. Just want to get my figures right. Besides, well, there are 17 dedicated investigators employed by the DPCI. And in the NPA, we have filled the following posts. And when I say these are dedicated TRC prosecutors, Chair and Honorable Members, I mean these prosecutors are going to be doing nothing else but TRC matters. And that is very, very, it's not the way the NPA has worked. So this is very, very important. In KwaZulu-Natal, there are five posts that have been advertised, Western Cape 2, in Grahamstown 4, Northwest 1, North Gauteng 3, the NPS Head Office 4, Limpopo 1, Northern Cape 1, Free State 1, Mthatha 1. And we have actually considered the number of posts depending on the number of cases in a particular region. And so that's based on that figure. With regard to the TRC matters that we are currently attending to, in the Eastern Cape, it's 7, Free State 2, Johannesburg 8, KZN 17, Limpopo 2, Mthatha 2, Northwest 4, Northern Cape 1, Pretoria 8, Western Cape 6. And the other is just general, it's 13, probably managed at the National Office Advocate of Cox.
Sorry, NTPP. On that
if it's necessary. So the total of 105 cases.
Sorry, NTPP.
A number, there are noteworthy cases NTPP. That are in court. There aren't many.
NTPP, sorry.
I agree.
Sorry.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes. There's something that I would just like to get a clarity. I think it's a little bit confusing. The minister talked about 34 investigators and 23 prosecutors. Now, this 17 that you're talking about and the 23 the minister is talking about, can you explain it?
Yes, Chair, we'll address that.
Okay.
Sorry, are we? Okay, thank you. Sorry about that, Chair. We'll address that issue, Chair. And so there have been matters that have come to court. I agree, it's been a trickle. But what I can assure the Chair, Honourable Chair and committee members is that this capacity has been put in place. And we need to give it some time to really start working to see these cases coming through. We are working with an investigator that the families have appointed. And it is this close collaboration with the families that will allow us to move these cases forward. Now, the specific issue relating to the CRADOC 4 matter, where the NPA missed a deadline, Chair, the position in that matter is that the in an effort to get the NPA to move faster, the family brought an application to compel the NPA to make a decision. What happened then is, and I will ask my colleagues to add to this, is that the matter was in court and we had to, the NPA made a decision, made a commitment to make a decision by the 2nd of December. Nambula, is that right? By the 2nd of December. But it was It was dependent on investigations being complete, but yes, there was a commitment. The prosecutors handed the docket over to the lawyers representing the families. And they then identified a whole lot of issues that required further investigations. And it became clear that we were not going to, the NPA was not going to be able to meet the deadline that they had in fact committed to. And what the prosecutors then did is that they, the DPP of the Eastern Cape, Mr. Barry Madolo, who is now himself personally involved in these matters, on the 1st of, where do I have a date? On the 1st of December, sent a letter to indicate that that we were not going to be able to meet this deadline. And that, yeah, I just want to get make sure I get my facts right on this, Chair. Just one moment. Let me get the... indicated that we were not going to meet the deadline and attempted to inform the lawyers. But regrettably, it seems like that letter did not reach the lawyers. And that was the challenge in this matter. But it was clear from what the victims, or the family of the victims had indicated, there's still a lot of investigation that's outstanding in this matter. And we need to be able to, together with the support and the investigator that the family has brought on board, to work together. In fact, I understand that just today or yesterday, I'm not sure, that Mr. Madolo, the DPP in Eastern Cape, was meeting the investigator of the family in order to see how we could move this case forward. But what is clear is that there's still investigations. And I agree, one can ask the question, why did the NPA not deal with these investigations before this date? And as I explained, this is what the challenges we were facing with. We have a dedicated capacity now. And I'm asking that let's just give this a little time to show results. And if at the end of a reasonable period, we say, look, this is also not working, then let's think about trying to do something else. So for now, Chair, that is the position with regard to the particularly the Fort Kalata matter. And Chair, in as much as I understand the frustrations of the family and the need to ensure that, you know, these cases are brought to court quickly, we need to work with the families. It's difficult to litigate and to work together at the same time, but we want to work. We understand why they were perhaps driven to litigation, but we have to work together. In the case, for example, the COSAS 4 case has been brought to court. People have been charged there, and it shows that where the evidence is there, cases are being brought to court. So I just ask, Chair, that we be allowed to move forward with this new dedicated capacity together with investigators from the DPCI and try to get these cases to court as soon as we can. Chair, in conclusion, I'd like to say that, you know, as I said at the outset, Chair, the NPA is a critical constitutional institution in our democracy. And fixing the NPA, which is our goal, and also the criminal justice system, because there are serious challenges in the criminal justice system. Fixing the NPA and the and the CJS is critical to the future of our constitutional democracy. The future of our country does depend on this. But what we are doing is that we are rebuilding systematically. It's like building a house, Chair. We have to have a strong foundation, and we are really building it block by block. And these things don't happen fast. But there has been incredible progress, given where we started 2 years and 9 months ago. Think about it, Chair, honorable colleagues. 3 years ago, we had suspects, for example, the Guptas, that were still in this country, flashing their wealth with ill-gotten gains of our people and various other people. But now, where are they? Hiding somewhere, trying to avoid arrest. And so, you know, we had not just them. There have been many people that have been flaunting their wealth funded by money destined to uplift the poor and the most vulnerable. But today the question is, are they sleeping peacefully in their ill-gotten luxury, or are they wondering when is there going to be a knock on their doors? That is the impact of our ongoing work. I know we need to bring cases, but Chair, there's a lot that's going on that's different from where we started. When I worked at the ICC, Chair, we worked under a very, very difficult, similar political context where you have a very challenging political environment, but you need to do your work as the prosecuting authority. So it's not only something that is peculiar to South Africa. And we need to make sure that we don't fall under the trap where we succumb to pressure. And because of pressure, we move too quickly when we shouldn't have. Moving too fast can be counterproductive. And we will play right. Can you imagine if just after the national director took office, we started prosecuting people that were accused of state capture without properly investigated cases? I, as the national director and the NPA, would have been accused of targeting certain factions. And therefore, we need, and we are still being accused of that. But what we are doing is systematically building cases. Chair, there's mountains or terabytes of evidence that prosecutors and investigators have to wade through in order to make sure that our cases are watertight. Failure, Chair, of the NPA will be, have a huge impact on our constitutional democracy. And it's like this house, you know, if you don't build a house on a solid foundation, it collapses and people are injured or die. We can't afford not to build the NPA on a solid foundation. Our decision-making must be separated from pressure, but we must act with a sense of urgency. And that is what we are trying to do. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, NTPP. You said you are going to explain the issue of the 17 dedicated prosecutors, investigators, and the 34 that was raised by the minister.
Chair, I'm just going to make sure. Chair, I'm going to get the detail from Advocate de Kock and the numbers and to see where's the confusion, and I'll respond to that as soon as possible, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, I have Honorable Janchi. Any other hands? Honorable Horn, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Swart, Honorable Breitenbach. You start with Honorable Janchi.
And myself, Chair.
Honorable Mula. Members who raise their hands now, you will be noted. Let's allow Honorable Janji to proceed.
Ngosasla, thank you very much to yourself for leading us to convene this critical session. Let me also take this opportunity to thank the NDPP Advocate Matoi for the presentation she has put forward. I, having watched her on Monday making the media pronouncement, I had mixed feelings whether the Monday media was a preemptive strike before Wednesday. So by the time we come on Wednesday, she would have well prepared us. I was not sure whether that was the strategy. But she seems to say it was long planned before Friday when we decided we want to see her. So I take that. But Chair, I just want to raise a couple of issues in both of the two issues that we're asking the NDPP. And I want to do so, Chair, with the theme that I really want to drive home, that we are going to need to go beyond personalities. Institutions must hold beyond individuals. The NDPP must know that today, tomorrow, and forever that she's leading that institution, because that certainly is going to be our attitude as the Portfolio Committee and Oversight Body. We whether there's Batoi today or Cronje, we are interested in the service of the NPA in terms of its core mandate. I really want to say that up front, because if we don't do that, we are going to be diverted every time that this individual leaves, and then we're diverted from the core functioning of this institution. Advocate Batoi makes a firm assertion that there is no crisis in the NPA. She did that on Monday. She's repeating it today. I will accept the assertion that she's making. But I think that institutions, healthy institutions, are characterized by stability and leadership. They are characterized by capacity and the kind of needed skills, but as well as operational efficiency in its core mandate. Just on those three issues, accepting that there's no crisis, on these three issues, I know that the NPA is found wanting on issue of leadership stability, on the capacity and the kind of needed skills and operational efficiency. And if you listen to this presentation, you're going to pick up some of those kind of issues. And I make a firm view that those three critical areas don't seem to apply to the NPA. Because as we know it, the NPA chair has got a lot of acting positions in provinces and regions. On Monday, one of the things that NDPP said was that the work is done in provinces. It's not necessarily done at head office. And yet we know that in many of those provinces, you've got a lot of vacancies and acting positions. We know for a fact that since Advocate de Kock left the Western Cape, that position has not been filled. It's been acting. And you can go to the Free State. You can go to another province where you have this. That speaks to your issue of leadership capacity. I'll come back on the issue of the ID, because just on her presentation on this issue of the TRC, it begins to demonstrate to me that if she does not have a crisis, the NPA has got a problem, and we must confront that problem. It's not new to us. We've been traveling this journey with them. Maybe when you are, the media is being addressed, that can be said, but not with us. Because we've been every step of the way, from the first point when she was appointed as NDPP, and we going through that with her. As we sit here, the team, the leadership, many senior prosecutors, and Honorable Breitenbach normally raises this a lot. You still have got these salary disputes that we have between NPA and senior NPA prosecutors, some of whom have to continue being embarrassed about the people who are subordinate to them earning more than what they could, to a gap of even over 21,000 in one of those examples. You've got low morale in the NPA, and I thought that should attend to these kind of issues. Now, Chair, just on the ID, because my issue here, if Advocate Cronier has taken a decision, and I hope she's here, Chair, because Advocate Cronier remains the staff of the NPA. I hope she will be able to speak to us, because I would have certain questions directed to her. I hope she is here, because she has resigned to leave at the end of March. And there are certain answers we'd want to hear from her, not for her to be spoken over by the NDPP. There are three areas that the ID had to focus on, and I'm interested, Chair, as she's leaving by end of March, in these three areas, do we have any time-bound assurances of deliverables in these three areas? One, she was tasked to deal with corruption in the security sector. Okay? Two, to deal with corruption in the SOEs. Three, to deal with corruption that involves high level, both private and public individuals. Now, before we leave this meeting, my most takeaway, whether Advocate Cronier is there or not there, when the NDPP says they are poised to strike, can she confine that to these three areas and say to us,
by March 2022. Don't give me names. Don't give me cases, case numbers. But in each of these categories, is this committee, as we sit here today, being assured that on the corruption in the security sector, this is what is going to hand over, this is what we are going to be seeing delivered without giving us a name. On the corruption in the SOEs, what is there that is working on to live with this institution, and the corruption on high level individuals without giving us the names, because that would have been her core framework, her core area of work. And as she leaves, we cannot get clarity as to whether there's been progress on this, or is she leaving because there's lack of progress in terms of what she has been. So I would like to get that check. And I would leave that because I'm less interested in, because we did not call this meeting to say we because it's one thing to like an individual in terms of their performance, their ethical work and so on. But as I said, we're going beyond individuals, we're dealing with institutions. On the issues of the TRC chair, it's very clear, just listening to Advocate Baitoa herself, that it had to take attorneys and lawyers of a family to poke holes in the work of the NPA. That on its own, chair, is so profound to indicate that there is a problem of operational efficiency, of capacity, the fact that now there needs to be further investigation, because that would have been kind of identified. I think, Chair, on these issues of trade of four, because on the other hand, you have the Cossas four and so on, who are in court, and yet that process is stalled. It's not just the trade of four. But on this, Chair, I think we must make the point that what has been presented, Advocate Baitoa, on this, from where I'm sitting, in my words, the justification you're making for this lack of progress is not persuasive, is not compelling, and I think this is the kind of presentation you are making that I think we should ask you to go back, and with some certain timelines shared under your leadership, to say by this time, end of December, or by this time in January, can the NDPP come back to us, not with some kind of general presentation she has made. The NDPP or NPA has certainly been caught with pens down on this issue of TRCs. No amount of justification is convincing about this lack of progress. It's actually a saying, Chair. So in conclusion, this is what I was, we don't have much in front of us to even say we are optimistic that something is happening. Even as she concluded, she's not able to give us anything that we can take home. And I'm suggesting that we, before you close this meeting, we agree to say this is the timeline you give her for them to come back with clear deliverables on this process in terms of the CRADOC 4. Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for being long.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chairperson. At the outset, Chair, I want to confirm that, yes, as in the past, we of course agree with the National Director that the NPA is an incredibly important institution for the health of our constitutional democracy. And I think the context to today's engagement is, of course, Chair, the fact that when the NDPP took office, she came, amongst other, to this committee with a very detailed and convincing analysis as to what was wrong at that stage at the National Prosecuting Authority, as well as undertaking and let's say a plan as to how to rebuild. But now we are some period, we have progressed somewhat in terms of time at least. And at the outset, I want to say through you, Chair, to the NDPP, that is part of the context now. And unfortunately, from where I'm sitting, Chair, one of the problems we're having is that apart from being informed that some sort of a foundation to this house has now been built, unfortunately, very little is displayed in by way of tangible and measurable evidence that real progress has been made. So we've had the engagement a few weeks ago around the annual report, when we had the engagement with the ministry in the plenary some time ago. We were informed that the annual report really is not showcasing what has happened since the end of the financial year. But yet, we now see that the head of this investigative directorate, which was at the time, and others have mentioned it, put forward in the public eye as part of the solution to fix the inefficiencies that at the NPA and on the one hand, but also part of the solution in terms of the need to tackle corruption and state capture in this country. And therefore, when this head of the investigative director chair is leaving office before the end of her term, South Africans, and we are now their representatives, are really entitled to transparency and accountability. So when I hear the NDPP say that she's not going to unpack the interpersonal issues that has been there, I can accept that, Chair, because I think she's quite correct to say that any one of us who's worked in any environment, whether it is a high pressure environment, a corporate environment, or whatever environment, would understand and accept that there's always going to be some interpersonal tension. But having said that, I think without going into detail, one must ask the question as to what extent has that interpersonal issues contributed to the fact that Advocate Cronier is going to be leaving office prematurely, and whether it can be stated without fear of contradiction now or going forward that ultimately those issues did not play any role. So that's the first question I want to ask. Then secondly, Chair, in terms of also now managing the situation, and if I am to accept that this is not a crisis, then it is at least a serious bump in the road. And in terms of managing an institution like this with the responsibilities that comes with being the national director, my view would firmly be that whilst one cannot bow to public pressure, you still have the duty in a situation like this to do some serious introspection and to ask yourself, given the fact that you as the national director is the one functionary in this country who is supposed to have all the information as to what has led to this resignation, you must ask yourself, if I can turn back the clock, what would I, should I have done differently, or what would I have done differently if I were in the same situation? And that is, of course, the type of question you must ask yourself in order to grow from this situation and as part of senior management. So I want to ask the NDPP, what is the answer to these questions? And that is not necessarily, Chair, only in respect of the interpersonal issues, but also if one then accepts that the interpersonal issues was not at the heart of the resignation, then there, of course, must be structural issues that has led the head of the investigative directorate to reaching a conclusion that ultimately she must leave this office. Because, I mean, if we are to accept that this investigative directorate has been positioned by her in such a way that it's ready to, as the Honourable Jayanti said, pounce now, then there must be some other very serious structural issues that has caused this resignation. And I think we are entitled to ask what are those, even if it is not necessarily something with which the NDPP agrees. But once again, even if you disagree with the relevance or ultimately whether those issues should be a deal breaker, what are those and how are you going to respond so that in an objective manner, the successor won't also ultimately in a few months leave the office because of these structural issues. So we hear, Chair, about the 120 staff members and the hope really that this will be increased to 200. But if we look beyond the 5-year scope of this investigative directorate, and we are to assume that something, even if it's not this investigative directorate, maybe a successor type of unit, is going to be there on a more permanent basis, what is the long-term vision as to the look and the feel and the organogram of this? And ultimately, to what extent has the fact that that this quite possibly has not been settled also influenced the decision of Advocate Grenier to leave office? And then lastly, Chair, three issues. And I heard the NDPP making the statement about inaccurate media reports, and whilst all of us in politics quite obviously also have at some stages been at the brunt of maybe inaccurate report, the reality is that the media play a vital role to assist in terms of also informing South Africans and playing an oversight role in terms of public institutions. So whilst I have some sympathy for her, I think the reality is that we can also not leave unattended to as to what has been reported. So two issues I want to raise in this regard is the first issue is that some of the media seem to suggest that some of the tension was not interpersonal, but rather centered about the lack of the results after an expenditure of about 400 million rand in respect of consultants or senior legal practitioners, which if I remember at the time was going to be the ones who ultimately through their involvement as consultants trying to ensure that the NPA take watertight cases to court. So they were going to be the ones who question evidence, chains of evidence. So is there any truth that ultimately the 400 million rand has been spent, but the cases are not case ready yet? And then maybe linked to that, Chair, the whole issue of, and this is a repeated refrain when we talk about these state capture and corruption related cases, and it has been again been said today by the DPP that it cannot be afford that there be mistakes made. And then some of the media reports seem to suggest that ultimately the fear for failure was a major issue in respect of the way the investigative directorate has gone about their affairs or the preparing cases. So I want some comment regarding that. And specifically, ultimately, I want to ask Advocate Batoye the question as to, yes, whilst, of course, nobody wants to go to court with something less than a rock-solid case, when do you reach that tipping point where you also realize that this case is ready, even though it may not be perfect? Because even a non-perfect case might be winnable. And then lastly, Chair, in respect of the the building of capacity, and today the statement again has been made that, and we accepted at the time that capacity to deal with this type of more complex cases was lacking in the NPA. And now it's being said that we are building this capacity, but I want to know, how are we building this capacity if we're not taking cases to court? I mean, it obviously can't be built through moot courts. I would have always thought, and that was my understanding at the time, that through taking less complex cases to court, the capacity in the prosecution amongst prosecutors would be built to then ultimately start taking the more complex cases to court. So I want some feedback on that regard, in this regard, also having heard the statement again that we are building this capacity within the ID in terms of more senior prosecutors needed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Horn, Honourable Swart.
Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you to the NDPP. And I just want to start off by just also encouraging you and all the staff in the NPA. This is a very challenging time for you. And though we might ask some very robust questions, we do join you in wanting you to succeed, in wanting the successful prosecutorial services to be set up, to build on that foundation that you have been doing, and to bring to book all those criminals that are been involved in gender-based violence, in state corruption, and to recover the ill-gotten gains. And so I appreciate the work that you've been done, that your colleagues have been doing up to now, given the fact that the NPA was hollowed out largely under the previous administration, and it does take time. And I know the Deputy Minister, hopefully, is on the platform. I mentioned this in Parliament as well, that I do understand the complexities of these matters, of the forensics involved, but at the same time, I'm sure you'll appreciate that we, as public representatives, are also have been under pressure to ask the right questions and to inquire as to the successful prosecutions of those involved in state capture. Given the fact, for example, I was personally involved in the parliamentary ESCOM inquiry some years back, and I remember even at that stage saying there is evidence already, and so it's a number of years that has passed, but understanding the complexities of these issues. So from our perspective, we clearly are deeply saddened by the resignation of Advocate Grenier. And I would like to thank her through this portfolio committee for the work that she's done in setting up the ID and under very difficult circumstances, under budgetary constraints. And I'm sure my colleagues will, and the chairperson might want to comment on this at a later stage, setting up this very, very important institution, setting up that foundation. That having been said, I appreciate the fact that details have not been given as to Advocate Cronier's resignation and the reasons for that, but if one has a look at her last briefing, which was in July, one can glean from that some of the frustrations. And so I'd like you to just refer to this, and so that we can have an understanding of whether these frustrations are being addressed and to what degree we as Parliament can assist you, given the fact that this could have contributed to her resignation. Let me just highlight some of them, and they relate to institutional impediments that she has set out. At that stage, it was before Parliament's Standing Committee on Public Accounts. First of all, the lack of skilled and capable investigators and prosecutors who are equal to the scale and scope of the investigations and prosecutions that the ID sees with. Secondly, the dependence of the ID on personnel for secondments from law enforcement partners, because the NPA Act does not make provision for the appointment of investigators to the NPA on a permanent basis. Now, that relates to security of tenure of your of the investigators in the ID, and I think that is a great concern. And to what degree is that being addressed to ensure that your investigators have security of tenure? Thirdly, what was, if this account is correct, a dire skills shortage in the public sector with constraints on employing skills outside of the NPA, specifically recruitment of financial investigators and critical litigation skills at sustainable remuneration rates. The next item relates to plans to transition State Capture Commission resources and capability to the ID being delayed by the extension of the Commission's timeframe with significant impact on the ID work. Now, we appreciate in that regard that there has been, the laboratory is being set up, the forensic laboratory, according to the Minister's briefing in November, that the forensic lab currently being used by the Zonda Commission is going to be transferred to the IB. Can we get an idea as well as to how that is progressing? And of course, the transfer of the investigators that are presently working with the Zonda Commission to the ID or the NPA, and what the tenure, what their tenure will be. Another item that was raised by Advocate Cronier as being an institutional impediment related to slow procurement processes within the state being a further delaying factor. And lastly, the digital and commercial investigation capability, which is purportedly said to be critical in cases where, as you said earlier, NDPP, terabytes of data has to be analyzed and processed. So those are some of the concerns that she raised, and it would appear that they could, if one speculates, this could have been a reason for reaching a level of frustration not being able to continue. So if you could comment on that, I'd greatly appreciate that. The next item that I'd like to raise is, we understand the head of the asset forfeiture unit will now, Advocate Rabaji Resetabe, will be assisting or supporting Advocate Cronier in this transitional phase. Now, we're all aware of the challenges that the asset forfeiture unit has. And if one has regard to what is purportedly said, that Advocate Cronier has been working night and day on these issues, how will she manage? How will the head of the asset forfeiture unit support Advocate Cronier in this transitional phase? And will this not negatively impact on the asset forfeiture unit itself? Now, one of the perennial issues has been the cooperation with the Hawks and the challenges with those dockets being prepared. Was this possibly a reason for Advocate Cronier's resignation as well? And how is that relationship at this stage with the NPA and ID being also reliant to a large degree on the capacities of the Hawks? Now, I was interested at the to note again that the budget for the ID, 107 million to 180 million, and again we as Parliament need to accept the fact that we appropriate funds, and when there's such budgetary constraints given to the ID, which would has been said to be a mid-sized law firm taking on the massive billions of rands that have been stolen, can it be fair to expect the ID to do the work required of them given these budgetary constraints? It's, to me, still, even though one could argue 180 million is a lot of money, it's still a very small amount given the complexities of the cases. When one looks at the Eskom case, for example, could it be a possibility that Eskom helps fund those prosecutional matters? I know there was challenges with the Steinhoff investigation where the Steinhoff company funded forensic investigations, but surely one needs to start looking at additional financial resources to prosecute these very large cases, obviously maintain maintaining one's independence at all times. I know there was controversy even around the Steinhoff forensic funding, but to make progress and to have the sufficient forensic, there's probably forensics where the most money is spent, and again, as Mr. Horn indicated, the 400 million for legal practitioners, sums of money need to be spent. But the benefit, as I've always said, is you can recover hundreds of billions of rands. The SIU can. The asset forfeiture makes no sense to me to cut your budget when you can recover millions and millions of rands, unless there's not a political will to support the work you're doing. And at the end of the day, we as parliamentarians need to accept responsibility for that as well. But at the same time, as Honourable Diaki said, to hold you accountable as well, very much so. When it comes to the TRC cases, I would just like to ask about the pending High Court case now. Given the fact that, if I understood correctly, an undertaking was given, I'm not sure if that was made an order of court, given the family's litigation, and the fact that you have indicated there will be feedback, but is that litigation now going to continue, given the fact that the deadline was not adhered to? Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity to ask these questions.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ernest Breitenbach.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Yes, Chair, look, I understand perfectly the size of the job that the National Director undertook when she was appointed. I probably understand it better than most. I understand, again, probably better than most, how difficult these cases are to prosecute and how much time and effort goes into the investigation phase and compiling a docket that is court ready. It takes time. It takes serious amount of expertise and it takes a lot of work. So you can accept that I have full comprehension of those difficulties. But we are 3 years down the line and we have seen very little progress. I'm sure that there's been a lot of progress in the backroom building, institutions building, prosecutors building dockets. But again, that's what the public needs to see. And the National Director knew that when she took office. She knew that even then the public was impatient and angry and hungry for results. She acknowledged as much when she accepted office, and it's not frankly good enough now to keep telling us we need to be patient. Our patience has run out. That runway is closed. South Africans need to see results, and this committee, fortunately or unfortunately, is tasked with oversight of these institutions, and we must ask, we're here to represent the public. We must ask those questions on their behalf, because if they were here, that's what they would be asking. We need to see results. We need to see people in court. We need to see prosecutions happening. We need to see people going to jail. It's as simple as that. It's not hard. And I know that the National Director understands it. How she gets there is unfortunately her job. And they must now do it. Mr. Chair, Advocate Cronier is, I'm largely covered with regards to these issues by Advocate Yankee and Advocate Horn and Mr. Horn and Mr. Swart. Just a second. I'm sorry, can somebody ask in my place? There's someone ringing my doorbell. I'll go next.
Honorable Noma Temba Jale.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, my network is not well. I decided to switch off my camera. Chairperson, I have a few questions for Advocate Batoi. I just want to start first with the issue of Advocate Cronier. on that one, Advocate Batoi, I just want to find out now that she is leaving the office, and really the committee is left with, my colleague has already alluded to that, left with so many unanswered questions. There's a lot that we're still expecting from her, and now she's living with the very same knowledge. There was progress that she has been reporting about to the committee. And now somebody who's going to come will come, but even if you'll be able to take over, but I don't think that maybe to me, it will be like, you know, that progress, it will be like, we'll be able to gel as quick as we are expecting, if I may say. But the question that I have on this one is that Advocate Cronier was a woman, and she's leaving that position where really it is a setback when it comes to the emancipation and empowerment of women at the level of the senior senior position in this country. I just want to find out if, have you considered that when you replace her with a woman? If not, why? The second question is on the TRC. We just got the report that the investigated work started from 2017 to show progress. Up to this far, Chairperson, is about 5 years. And we are still where we are. We really understand the challenges and the complexity when it comes to such matters. But, you know, with the families, as we indicated earlier, the public and the family, to them, it is really not justice. I heard you advocate through your chairperson earlier when you were saying these things don't happen fast. My colleague have they have commented on that one. That statement on its own really does not bring comfort to the public and families, because these issues of TRC, they have been on the shelf for a long time, and really talking about losing patience is an understatement. This is one important issue to this country when it comes to uniting this country and bringing cohesion to this country, to the people of this country. If we are going to take this matter the way I see it happened, it is really not going to help this country to unite and to have the real rainbow country that we expect as the people on the ground. So 5 years is too much. And the report that we are getting now is that within the 5 years, only 57 families have been engaged on this matter. That is the report. When I calculated the numbers that you have gave us, in terms of the provinces, they give us 57. And to me, Chairperson, the question comes into my mind is that the whole all these years of apartheid, is it only 57 families? But I know it's not 57 families, but is that all that we can do for this country? And my issue also on this part of the families is that I was thinking in my mind that these families that we are talking about, 57 of them, it might be the families of those people that they are maybe well known, you know. They were well known, and they are the families that, for example, the two ones that we are just talking about, that maybe there are people that are really behind the foundations that are trying to push that they get justice on these families. What about those families that do not anybody to assist them? There is organizations like Kuluma and all those organizations, they've been bringing families forward to give their stories. Issues have not yet seen the light of the day. So I'm saying 5 years, that five wasted 5 years from 2017, including the years when we got democracy, is that all that we can do? This chairperson brings me to the issue of saying maybe this committee can also assist the families and the public by bringing speed on these issues of the TRC. For example, we have a slot, as we have been reported that we are having investigators that has been dedicated to this work of the TRC, that we give slot. We should not cluster this matter with other issues, because it is very important, Chairperson, very important. We give it its own slot so that we can monitor its progress and be able to give closure, even if it's not closure that we think that maybe we'll finish it now. But we should see progress, closure to some other families. As we are sitting here as a committee, at least we count and say, this one we dealt with, and people are big. We hear about the committee saying they want to see politicians in orange overalls every day. We want to see also perpetrators of apartheid in orange overalls, old as they are, because now we are not going to, we've been waiting for a long time. So we, if we can have a different slot, Chairperson, and also if we can be given a report about those other individuals and other families that they have not been consulted, one will appreciate. Progress is what we need, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Greidenbach.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I apologize for the interruption. So yes, I was largely covered by Honorable Janke, Honorable Horn, and Honorable Swart. But there are issues that are not being addressed, that are being glossed over by generalities and platitudes, and that's disappointing. Advocate Cronje is not a faint-hearted woman, not by any stretch of the imagination. She knew what the job was when she signed up for it. She has a history of employment in the NPA. She was a senior manager in the NPA for some time. So she knew what she was getting into. And I'm not convinced by this the suggestion that everything is hunky-dory and there are no issues, and her leaving is nothing odd, and that in fact it's healthy to change horses in midstream. We know it isn't. And I agree with Honourable Janke in that regard. So we don't know why she's left. We're left to speculate along with everybody else who's speculating, and the National Director is not telling us. But it is deeply concerning that somebody of the caliber of Advocate Cronje abandons her project, on which she has obviously worked very, very hard and put in a lot of time at great personal cost, half complete. It's unlike her, and it leaves me deeply concerned. I don't expect to get any more information than has already been given. I'm merely commenting that I'm not convinced, and while it may well be healthy to change in leadership may be healthy every now and then, this was a fixed term contract. It was only for 5 years. It was never going to be forever, and it's very unlike Advocate Cronier to leave a project dangling halfway through. So I'm concerned. The national director in the press conference mentioned that the investigative directorate was only dealing with a small percentage of the matters, concentrating on the highest priority cases, I presume the most complex and highest profile cases, and that the rest were being dealt with by the specialized commercial crime units. I would like a percentage breakdown so that we can understand precisely what's happening here. What percentage of matters is being dealt with by the ID and what percentage of matters is being dealt with by the SCCU? And then how is the SCCU capacitated to deal with this massive influx of work? And when the Zondo Commission work arrives at the NPA, I've got no doubt that the greatest bulk of that work will also devolve to the SCCU. And what has been done proactively to ensure that they are capacitated to deal with the work? Because we all know that prosecutors are not born, they are made over a long period of time. So it takes anything between 5 and 10 years to make a decent prosecutor, an experienced, capable, confident, because that's very important, confident prosecutor. Takes around 20 to make an experienced, efficient, capable and confident specialist prosecutor. Doesn't happen overnight. So what has been done proactively to ensure that the SCCU will be fully capacitated to deal with this amount of work that is clearly not all going to go to the ID? And when the ID in 5 years' time ceases to exist, or in less than 3 years' time ceases to exist, what is going to happen to those cases then? If the resignation of Advocate Cronier has taught us anything, it should be that we should be looking ahead. So what is the plan for the future? Then the National Director referred to in the press conference, particularly to Stalingrad tactics being used by accused people in high-profile cases, and of course we all know that's true. We've seen the master of it doing it for the last 20 years. So everybody knows about these Stalingrad tactics, and every prosecutor certainly knows about it, but of course they must be dealt with. Cases can't drag on forever and ever and a day. So you understand Trump. So there are sections in the Criminal Procedure Act, more specifically Section 342A, that deals with this kind of thing. And there's a portion of Section 342A that has not been promulgated, and it relates to cost orders. Is it, in the view of the National Director, would it be helpful to dealing with these issues if that section was promulgated? And if so, she must tell us so that we can try and assist. The National Director also had a semi-harsh approach towards the press. And I agree with her that the National Prosecuting Authority must be supported, and Lord knows we've certainly supported them. They've got to deserve and then earn that support, though. So to suggest that the press shouldn't criticize is a little unfair, I think, and not real. And it needs to be a two-way street. If there's a proper interaction and communication with the press, then they wouldn't have to rely on information that's not necessarily factually correct. But I do want to point out that prior to the appointment of this national director, so Prison Company excluded, to a very large extent, the public was reliant on the investigative journalists to tell us what was going on. There was no one else. The National Prosecuting Authority was captured fully, and up to all kinds of shenanigans. If it hadn't been for investigative journalists, we would have been in serious trouble and state capture would never have come to the fore. So there's a lot of very good work done by the press and they should be acknowledged for it. And then I'd like to get to the TRC matters. I'm not sure what the role of the PCLU is if it's not doing TRC matters. I may be wrong, but my initial understanding of the PCLU was that it was, amongst others, set up to deal with those matters. And it is a long time. It's a lot of water has flown under this bridge. We are 28 years down the line of a constitutional democracy, and still those families are waiting for justice. It's an inordinately long time to wait for justice. And we're not referring to trivial matters here. Families have been very seriously impacted. And many, many, many people have been affected by these cases, and I know that the National Prosecuting Authority knows that. But the only thing that they have left is some sort of justice for their family members who were killed or disappeared. And if they don't get that justice, well, then we certainly failed them. The NPA will have failed them, and so would we. And we can't afford to do that. My disappointment with the lack of progress in the TRC matters stretches to all of them. But I would particularly like to refer to the matter that we asked the National Director to come here for today, and that's the Tradoc 4 matter. My understanding of the situation is that the matter has dragged on and on and on despite personal undertakings given to particularly Mrs. Goniwe and Mrs. Kalata. And that those undertakings were not met. And as a result of that, as an act of desperation, the litigation was undertaken, rather reluctantly. And that the litigation was then suspended because of the matter being placed under case management by Judge Ledwaba. And the litigation was suspended on the back of an undertaking that a decision would be given by the 2nd of December. So when the date approached, the due date, given an undertaking given to a judge, no less, which in my day carried some weight, I'm not sure if it still does, it should. In the run-up to that date arriving and being fully aware, because certainly the prosecutor involved must have been fully aware that they weren't going to meet that deadline. Surely, proactively, a week, a day, a month before, you contact the parties and say, we gave you this undertaking. We've done our very best. These are the circumstances preventing us from managing, and can you possibly give us more time? And certainly to include the judge in that correspondence so that he also knows. I would have thought that would have been the way to deal with it. As it happens, the letter sent by Mr. McDonald did not reach the intended recipient. And so the day came and went with nothing. Can you imagine the crushing disappointment? It's just not the way we should be treating, complainants, citizens, and particularly not in matters of this sensitivity. So I really don't think that it's being dealt with very well. And I do think that that more can and should be done in that regard. I'll leave it there, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Ngola.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. The disadvantage about your committee, Chair, is that if you are the sixth speaker on the line, when your time comes, all issues may have been exhausted. Nevertheless,
no, Honorable Mola. There is no, in fact, you won't be penalized when you say, no, I'm covered. You won't be
penalized. I just have some few sharp issues to point out. Although my colleagues have covered a lot of ground, I agree with all of them, starting from Honorable Gyanti to Honorable Breitenbach. The first issue, Chair, is the last point Honorable Breitenbach finishes on the failure of the prosecuting authority to inform the families or the legal representatives. Yes, one would have actually expected NPA to have written to them a month, 2 weeks, explaining why they would not be able to reach the undertaken deadline. But moreover than that, the answer from the NDPP says they have attempted to write to the legal representatives of the family. But those legal representatives did not actually receive the letter. I mean, in my view, Chair, this is a very ambiguous answer. It's 2021. We're no longer using Telegram. We are swiftly going away even from the postal services of the South African Post Office. Nowadays, even when you send an email, Chair, it tells you if this email was sent or not. It even tells you when the address you were sending the email to could not be found. So I think the NDPP should not be shy to tell us that the NPA failed to honor what they were supposed to have done. Because from where I'm standing, the explanation of the attempt to send the letter to legal representatives does not stand. Or if the NDPP can convince us that it stands by saying, this is what actually happened, not the fact that you attempted to send a letter, that they could not find it and all that. To me, it's an ambiguous answer that does not help what we're trying to do as this committee. Two, Chair, given the current evidentiary material at the disposal of the NPA, both the financial and the human resource they have, what do they think will be the turnaround time for them to resume prosecution on these apartheid crimes? It's 27 years after democracy, and we're still talking about the backlog on non-prosecution of apartheid crimes. Crimes that have been declared to be crimes against humanity. It's not acceptable, Chair. And I want to propose, Chair, through you to the committee as well, that this must be part of our focus areas as the committee. We must pay particular detail on this thing and ensure that there is periodic reporting on the progress made in the prosecution of these apartheid crimes. The last issue, Chair, I would want to raise. NDPP, we have asked you nicely as this committee to pay focus and attend to a matter of a warfare between black prosecutors and the management of NPA in the Eastern Cape, particularly. But as things stand, it looks like the problem is actually worse than it was when we first met and talked about it. It looks like there is no improvement between these black prosecutors and these managers of NPA. And the accusations leveled against these managers still stand. Now, I would want to check if there has been any progress made in terms of mitigating that problem. Because it is a problem, Chair, and it creates a very inconducive workplace condition when colleagues are taking each other to court over internal matters of the prosecuting authority. Has there been progress made in terms of mitigating the problem? Is there an internal effort the NPA is doing to ensure that it brings the problem to an end so that the work of prosecution on behalf of South Africans can resume without any turbulence? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngola. Honorable Hendricks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, Honorable Jelly touched the court for the nation, and this was later reinforced by the Honorable Breiten Bach. The matter of TRC cases is very close to the hearts of many of us, but it was very encouraging to hear the National Director suggesting that families must work closely with a dedicated unit. And that's why I want to ask the question, is there cooperation with the legal teams of Imam Abdullah Harun and the legal team of Chief Albert Latuli? As we know, the Chief Albert Latuli's daughters are of advanced age, and Imam Harun's wife passed on, losing much needed evidence. The Hawks opened, showed the family of the chief in our office in Stanger the files 2 years ago, and since then nothing has happened. We, with regard to the Craddock 4, we would like to know if there's a case number, and we would also like to know if there's a case number for the 1667 families referred to. At least that will give the families some comfort. I know there are many other families as well, but shouldn't that be the case? It also looks that professional conflicts are harming our democracy. So there's something wrong in our appointment processes. Honorable Chair, with regard to the email that disappeared into cyberspace, it's a clear indication of Stalingrad tactics, the very thing that the National Director speaks against. And isn't there a case that the National Director's Department must be charged with defeating the ends of justice and misleading the courts? So that is a question mark, and the nation wants answers. It is now 5 parliaments that have failed to carry out the directives of the TRC, and the 6th parliament, we just cannot fail. And that's why we depend on the national director to up their game. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hendricks. NTPP.
Thank you, Chair.
Maybe do you want a 3 minute
Chair, break? There's a number of questions. We're going to try to cluster them and deal with them.
We will give you 3 minutes so that
you can matters, and then I will ask Advocate Kok to go into some of the more specific technical questions that were asked. At the outset, I agree with all of the committee members who say that it's unacceptable where we are with the TRC matters. That is the reality. And I've gone through a little bit when I started off of the detail with regard to why we are as a country at this point. And having taken office as a national director in 2019, and what we've tried to do then, and even going back, if one looks at Vusi Pikoli's statement, which I mentioned, we are at this point moving forward, there's definitely a focus. But I think when you go backwards and look at why were these cases not dealt with, then it's unfair to put everything and ask the NPA to answer about why have these cases not been brought to book. 25 years since democracy. I agree. I have the same questions as the head of the NPA. But moving forward, this is what we are doing to address this, because what happened in the past is completely unacceptable. And we know that there are a whole range of reasons. There were political reasons that these cases were not brought to court. They were not investigated. And you know, look at Vusi Pikoli's statement. It sets it up. So I think, and besides that, the important issue as well is even with as we move forward in terms of trying to deal with these matters, it's that we cannot, the NPA does not, and I cannot, I mean, I don't want to, I hope I'm not coming across as being defensive, because that's not the case. The NPA does not investigate. We prosecute, but we work very, very closely with the DPCI investigative capacity in order to ensure that we have the investigators and working together with the families. I think there was another question about, maybe Advocate de Kock can give a little more detail if necessary, but we are determined to work with the families and the representatives of families to deal with these cases. I personally have had meetings with them at the outset when I first took office, in terms of ensuring that we have a very, very strong collaborative relationship. And we still commit to that, because we know that they have important impact, important contribution to make to the NPA and the DPCI, because it's not just the NPA, to investigate these cases properly and to make sure that we bring these cases to book. Chair, with regard to the other issues, the media, just on that point, I just want to say that I have said this often before, that, you know, the media, in fact, the role of media in terms of the media is an incredibly important stakeholder for the NPA. And the role that the media plays in keeping the country and the people informed is incredibly important. And the role that the media has played in terms of the investigative journalism to save our country from capture is hugely appreciated. So we do not underestimate, and in fact, we appreciate the work of the media very, very much. All we are saying is that we appeal for responsible reporting, and that is the only appeal that we make. But apart from that, the media is hugely important, and we certainly respect their role. Chair, I'm going to ask my colleagues to deal with. Chair, I believe there's a request for a short break.
There seems to be a problem with your system. When I speak to you, you don't hear me.
Sorry about that.
No problem. At that time, I was saying to you, there are many questions that have been asked. Maybe you might need to properly.
There are many questions.
Mr. Sarella, please mute yourself. Yes, I was saying that there were many questions. Maybe you might need to have 5 minutes or so, which will serve as a comfort break so that you can be able to spread your questions amongst your team members properly.
Sure, that'll be appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, can we come back at 12?
We'll do that, Chair.
Thank you very much. Over to you, NDPP.
Chair, thank you very much. And before I hand over to my colleagues, I just want to answer the question. A number of colleagues have alluded to this about the reasons why Advocate Cronier has left. I've said this before, and I'll repeat it, that in any institution where there are high pressures, there are high stakes, there's bound to be tensions, there's bound to be professional conflicts. And of course, yes, there were professional conflicts. And so, but at our level, at the level of heads of entities, you don't expect that we will be leaving because there are simply professional tensions. And so there's a whole range of issues that led to the point where myself and my exco decided that it would be in the best interests of the institution, of the NPA, that we part ways. And so, and you don't expect me as the national director, as the head of an institution, to go into all of the details of this. But what is really important is that, as I said, a national director and the head of the investigating director needs to be very, very closely aligned on high-level strategy, on case strategies, on prioritization issues, and all of these issues can lead to conflicts and tensions. So I'm not going to go into any more detail, but just to say that it's not simply because there were personality clashes that people at our level leave organizations. There's a whole range of issues, and I'm going to leave it at that, Chair. But I'm going to now call upon maybe Advocate de Kock first to deal with some of the issues, and then Advocate Duplessis, and then Advocate Rabaji, maybe Advocate Rabaji, Advocate Duplessis. Thank you, Chair. Advocate de Kock.
Thank you very much, NDPP. Good afternoon, Chairperson, and good afternoon, members of the committee. Thank you again for the opportunity for us to speak to the committee. At the outset, I think that we want to say and acknowledge and welcome the constructive recommendations that have been made by the committee in relation to the work of the TRC. We recognize that there's an urgency with which this work must be completed. To that extent, we have mobilized our resources in alignment with the resources of the police to ensure that we put together competent, capable men and women who are going to be able to carry us through with this difficult task. To that extent, we have recently engaged with the head of the DPCI, General Abeya, with his newly appointed Major General, Major General Kana, and the operational head of the Crimes Against the State team at the DPCI. We have agreed on a strategic approach that we need to follow to address the outstanding and residual issues relating to the TRC. We have created a capacity within the head office of the NDPP to start to address all the matters in collaboration with the head of the DPCI. The ideal model that we wish to put in place would be that these colleagues will work jointly in a very collaborative way. And so when we talk about dedication, that's exactly what we mean. So the way forward is that these members of the DPCI and these members of the prosecution will, at an operational level, be working with each other on a daily basis. And as the NDPP indicated earlier, that model was developed because there was a recognition that what was in place before was not good enough. And so we recognize that. And that is our response to how we're going to work in the future. So subsequent to our initial meetings, we had a workshop with the DPCI and ourselves. And we then agreed on this strategic approach. And what it will mean in practice is that there will be national direction and strategic leadership provided to ensure that the work of the TRC is finalized with urgency. There will be a national decision of a referral of any matter for investigation, and so that prosecutors can work very closely with the investigators to reach a determination about whether or not there is sufficient evidence to prosecute or not to prosecute. Where we arrive at the decision that there is not sufficient evidence to prosecute or not prosecute, we will revisit issues of having an inquest so that the evidence can be placed before a competent court in a formal way. The remaining witnesses will have to give evidence, and we've started that process already in some of the matters. And the idea is that the family will be given an opportunity to find closure. So even if we cannot institute a prosecution because we don't have sufficient evidence, we will ensure that all the available evidence will be placed before a competent court so that the court can make a determination regarding the questions of liability and whether or not anyone can be criminally held responsible for the deaths of the colleagues. So that is at a high level what our approach is going to entail. And I can say very confidently as we speak that we've got the commitment of General Abaya, we've got the commitment of the leadership of the DPCI, and we've got the commitment of the leadership of the MPA to ensure that these matters are going to be finalized. And so we're working very hard on lists. We're working very hard on identification of all the matters at a national level. Then at a regional level, this is where the operational work will happen. And so that is why we say we appointed a number of people into our respective directors of public prosecutions offices. So the directors of public prosecutions, with the normal leadership of the prosecution in those offices, will be responsible to ensure that this work of TRC is done at a local level, at a case level. And there we will have the senior management of the prosecution overseeing the work of these prosecutors that we are appointing. So they're not working in isolation. They're working under the supervision also of very senior people, including the DPPs, who must take personal responsibility for this work. So members of the committee, that is the context within which we are working, and that we have already done. So these foundational blocks have been put in place, and that's brought us now to the point where we can put numbers on the table. And so there is some uncertainty exactly what the numbers are, and that's understandable because it's work in progress. So then let's come to the specific question. So the first one related to the discrepancy that we had with the figures. MPA had mentioned 17, DPCI 34. And the minister had mentioned 34. So I have contacted General Abaya about that. And he's confirmed that the original number was in fact 34, as indicated by the minister. And the figure of 17 that was given by the MPA was the figure that they had currently in our unit, that was the number that they had. But that number had increased subsequently. General Abaya, furthermore, confirms that the number of 34 has increased to 40 just now recently, and there is still a suggestion that that number will increase further. And that will answer the question of Honorable Breitenbach, that you will need more investigators. So there's a recognition that you will need more investigators, and the DPCI is well on its way to do that. Taking into account that not too long ago, there were no investigators in place to deal with TRC. So that is substantial progress that we have already made in respect of the TRC work. As far as the prosecutors are concerned, we've indicated the numbers, and we will have eventually 25 prosecutors that are completely dedicated. But that doesn't mean that that will be the only prosecutors. Over and above that, we do have a management echelon that will assist those prosecutors and provide supervision and guidance. And of course, from time to time, where we need additional capacity, the normal capacity with the MPA is always available to support the work of TRC. So let's come to the question of the cases. So the approach is going to be going forward that we work very closely with the families of all the deceased colleagues in this matter. That work has already commenced, and there were questions about the Imam Haroon matter. The Director of Public Prosecutions in the Western Cape, with the senior leadership of the Western Cape, have met with the families, have met with the lawyers. In fact, this is the matter that the NDPP referred to, where the MPA was commended for the commitment and the work that we are doing in respect of the matter. I'm awaiting a further report from the director, because just recently I received a letter from the lawyers to ask for an update in terms of the investigation. So what is happening is there is a healthy pressure that is being exerted on the MPA to ensure that we are accountable. And I can tell the members of the committee that we are receiving letters on a daily basis from various lawyers, from various NGOs, asking us what is happening in the matter. And we are doing our best to keep the lawyers informed and to keep the families and the victims informed. So that will be ongoing work. Of course, we are saying we're not perfect. And we are saying there are many, many gaps that are happening. And we are saying that people are still being appointed. But in the interim, we are trying our best to keep our head above water and to ensure that these cases are getting attention. The second case related to the case of Chief Albert Luthuli that was mentioned earlier. Now, similarly, in this matter, the Director of Public Prosecutions of KZN with the prosecutors have also met with the families and have also engaging with the lawyers. And so our request is the following. We want to work with everybody. And we would really like to engage with the lawyers and the families in a very constructive way. That is our approach. We are not closing the doors. We are welcoming inputs. We are welcoming leads. We want to work together, and we will try to follow up on all the leads that are given to us. So in some instances, some of the law firms have appointed private investigators. And so in relation to the matter of the Craddock 4, there is also a private investigator. Now, just yesterday, the Director of Public Prosecutions of the Eastern Cape, Advocate Modolo, had called that private investigator and said, I want to meet with you. I want you to come and speak to me about what you have, and let's work together to take this forward. So that's exactly what we want. And that is exactly how we are going to work into the future. And so as long as we work in a constructive way, taking into account the mandate of the prosecution, and that we cannot be told what to do, and we cannot be told how to do our work, but we can collaborate because we do have a constitutional responsibility to maintain our independence and to act independently and not with bias and not with favor. But we can, of course, collaborate with all those stakeholders. And we always collaborate with the victims and bring their stories to the fore. That is going to be our approach going forward in respect of all the matters. As far as the deadline and missing of the deadline is concerned, we acknowledge upfront that this should have been dealt with differently, that those prosecutors who are involved in these matters should have at an earlier stage have indicated that we needed an extension. And that is the way it normally works. So this is how it should not work. And that is recognized. We accept all the valuable recommendations and inputs that have been made in that regard. And we will correct it going forward. The DPP, Advocate Modolo, who only comes recently on board in terms of this particular matter. He's only appointed 2 months ago. He's already seized with the matter. He's engaged with the senior leadership of the prosecution in the province. And he's already indicated that he will rearrange how the matter is going to be managed going forward. So those decisions are within his authority to make, but we do have his commitment that he will ensure that the outstanding work and the outstanding investigation is completed as soon as possible. There was a follow-up question in relation to that outstanding investigation and why the prosecutors did not pick that up. So my understanding of what took place here is that the docket in this particular matter, because of the application before the court, was disclosed to the lawyers of the families. And then there must have been some scrutiny of that, with additional information that the lawyers may have been privy to. And that is how they then subsequently wrote a letter 3 days before the deadline to say they've identified 23 additional witnesses that potentially should be interviewed. Now, of course, when we look at investigations and when we look at prosecutions, depending on how you look at it, you may want to follow certain aspects of it. The value of all of this will be determined by the outstanding investigation. Once the outstanding investigation is completed, we will then know whether or not any value has been added from an evidentiary point of view to the particular case. And the prosecution is interested in that evidence, then to make the decision whether or not there's sufficient evidence to prosecute anyone on a particular offense. So in this case, that is the reason why we have a dynamic where you say the lawyers saw this and the prosecution did not perhaps see that. But I don't have all that detail, except to say that both the lawyers and the DPP agreed that there wasn't sufficient time to complete the investigation by the 2nd of December, and we needed some more time in order to do that. So I think that should be our way forward. We should accept that things could have been done better. We should strengthen the communication between ourselves and the legal firms. We must strengthen the communication with the families and ensure that there's constant feedback to the families. And all of this is going to be written up into a directive from the national office to all of our directors of public prosecution, so that we can enhance and work together and ensure that our collaboration is enhanced across the board. Are there any other questions that I may have missed? So, colleagues, I think that is all from my side in DPP on the TRC work. If there's anything I've missed, I'm sure you will alert me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Advocate de Kock. Before I hand over to Advocate Rabaji, if I may just correct the issue of the letter with regard to notification of the applicant's lawyers. I didn't accurately mention what happened previously. There was indeed a letter that was sent from the DPP of Eastern Cape to the national office, indicating that there was a need for further investigation and that we were not going to meet the deadline. The LAD division in the NPA, which deals with civil litigation, then there was a communication to the state attorney to inform the applicant's lawyers that the NPA was not going to meet this deadline in time. And my understanding from what I'm informed is that the state attorney did contact the lawyers for the applicants to in fact communicate this state of affairs. I'm going to now call upon Advocate Rabaji. You could deal with that. I mean, need to swap case. Okay, I'm just going to spray this area so that you can come in here.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members, for this opportunity. I will start by responding to the question that was raised by honorable member Janke when he wanted a report on from Advocate Cronier, and he had hoped that Advocate Cronier will be here to answer on all the work that's done in the three sectors. So Advocate Cronier won't be with us, and we are working together, and in fact, we've been working together since I rejoined the NPA, particularly on
John Jeffries. What's up here?
Particularly on ASU cases. You might have noticed, particularly on the report that we gave on Monday to the media, that one of the things we did very well was recoveries as far as the work of the ID is concerned. So, and currently as we're speaking, we are finalizing our papers in the ID space for one of the big high impact cases in state capture. So just to give an update and to give assurance to the committee, we have got very experienced senior public prosecutors dealing with the three sectors, which is the high level public and private sector cases. You might have received our report, and in fact, it was well articulated in the annual report that we've got 8 cases with a lot of legs in this space. We've got a very experienced leader here, Advocate Peter Serunye. You might have seen him dealing with cases in this space. In fact, one of the cases, State versus Tarete and 16 others, it's the one where we have obtained the 500 million unrestrained, unkept order for the Gupta assets. And in our reports, we've got the details of all the assets that we've seized. Then we've got very experienced advocate who's dealing with security sector cases. We've got a lot of cases in this space. It's 2 major cases with Kapla legs. I couldn't get all the legs in this space, but we would be able to give the details should they be requested. So Advocate Lowe is leading this this team, and in September, I think he was the most affected when in the ID we had 15 of our members impacted by COVID, but we still managed to take cases to court. And then, of course, in the state-owned enterprises leg of the ID work, we've got 4 legs that we're dealing with in the Transnet space, as well as 5 legs in the Eskom space. And you'll recall that in the Eskom space, this is the one where we had a 1.4 billion asset for future order in the Chakudi matter. There was a question, in fact, it was to the minister, around these cases are not being taken to court. So I have got all the records from the team on all the cases that we've been taken to court. In July, at the height of COVID, and as I've said, we had 1 death of the lead investigator, we're in court 8 times. In August, we're in court 7 times, and I'm awaiting the statistics for September. But I certainly do have some of the dates in September when we were in court. For instance, the case of the Tabete case that I've referred to, it was back in court on the 6th of September, and this is where we got the restraint order confirmed, because you'll recall that we go to court, a rule is issued, and then it gets confirmed. For instance, if you look at the case of the first one that I dealt with, which is on the high-level public and private sector space, with the 500 million unrestrained and kept order, we started the case in May, and after many appearances in court, it was confirmed on the 11th of August. So I just wanted to confirm to the committee that the 3 leaders who are dealing with these cases, and as Advocate Gronier said when we gave our annual report to Parliament, the ID is now well poised to deal with these cases. There was a question around whether the work of the AFU will not be affected, as I will be supporting Advocate Cronier. For the last 20 years, when I left, we only had 3 regions of AFU, and all this work, together with the ID, we've done only with 3 regional heads. The minister has approved the appointment of 4 regional heads, effective actually yesterday. So AFU has now been strengthened. It has been now capacitated. We've got now in total 7 regional heads. And I think that I'll be able to support the ID going forward without compromising the work of the Asset for Future Unit. We've also got a decision from the SCA that confirms that for freezing orders, we can go to court ex parte, sometimes without explaining agency, if the merits of the case support it. So we were hampered in Mpumalanga, for instance, in that we're not getting orders from that area, from the court, because the directives were clear that our cases, AFU cases, must be heard ex parte and we must make out a case for agency. Now, with AFU, you can't give notice in all circumstances because the assets will be dissipated. So I just wanted to give committee members assurance as far as that is concerned. There was a question from Honorable Member Nomathemba Jele when she, well, a comment when she said, Advocate Kumanye is living with all the knowledge and that really it would be, the ID would have lost all that knowledge. We have been working together with Advocate Kumanye for a long time when we were both here 20 years ago and currently. We were back, we were in the bar and we're back again, and she has left. But should she elect to go back to the bar, she's definitely one of the best friends we have in the legal profession and will be able to continue to work with her. So I just wanted to give that assurance. Now, as far as the transition is concerned, I think in a way I was better positioned to continue to work with the IG in this transition era. We've been working together, as I've said, since I've come back, and I think the one question that wasn't asked is what is some of the best things that the ID, Advocate Kumanye, has done. We put our best foot forward as far as asset forfeiture is concerned, and we've done very well in that space. So And therefore, I continue to work together with the team. I've met twice with the management team of 18 members, and the team has been reassured by Advocate Kumanye that this is doable. And all of them were saying, we're going to continue to do it to honor the legacy that we have started. So the team is very committed in terms of at looking at the work that has started, and as I've said, the cases have been in court and they'll continue to happen. In fact, when we come back to Parliament in March, I think there would be further cases, high impact cases that we would have done and that we would be able to report to Parliament on. So with this transition period, I would obviously be able to make firm recommendation to the national director and certainly to our principals, the Minister of Justice, on some of the macro issues that affect the ID and the NPA to an extent, as well as the micro operational issues that affect the team. For instance, as far as where operationally we want to take the ID, there's 5 game changers that has been alluded to. We were exploring and will come back with firm recommendations regarding whether we should have corruption courts. The natural resolution that we're looking at, particularly for corporates, we finished the work and we should be able to get some settlements with corporates to increase the level of accountability as far as natural resolution is concerned. So there are issues that we're looking at and we'll come back with firm recommendations. And I'm happy that the ID is poised, as Advocate Kumanye said herself, that will definitely be moving forward. So, Honorable Members, Chairperson, I don't know whether there's something I haven't dealt with, but as a person who's been working with the team for some time and much more intensely now, I can give the committee and the South Africans assurance that the work continues and we are poised to really make an impact going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to call upon Advocate Duplessis
the head of strategy, operations and compliance to deal with some of the resource and some of the issues that were raised. Thank you. Anton?
Thank you, NDPP, honourable members. Chair, I know we have just reached the end of this original time for this session, so I will be very brief, and I'm actually just going to summarise the points that have come from a number of colleagues, a number of questions, and this is really about the sort of institutional framework within which the ID is operating. And let me start by saying we're not for one moment suggesting that that all the support that is needed has been required. We still have a long way to go. And of course, there are serious challenges within the context of the bureaucracy that we find ourselves in. And it's a frustrating bureaucracy. We want things to move faster, but there are many partners involved. So, for example, the minister referred to the question of the building and the engagement with public works and the engagement with DPSA. So yes, let me put that up front. We would want things to move much faster than they sometimes do in the organization, not only within the ID, but more broadly. And it is a frustration. I think the minister once referred to the challenges of delivering high impact work with huge expectations in the context of statecraft. And it's just an important point to make that we do need to navigate these bureaucratic hurdles. But a number of issues I'm going to touch on four very briefly, Chair. The first one is the question of lack of skilled investigators and prosecutors. And as the NDPP says, while there are a lot of prosecutors within the NPA that do have skills to deal with complex crimes and a whole range of crimes, the nature of state capture is on a completely different level. I think some of the most advanced democracies in the world will struggle with the nature of, as we've heard, terabytes of data. And South Africa, unfortunately, is infamous for the high levels of crime. And we mustn't underestimate that the level of corruption and organized crime in our country is also at a high level. So we do need additional skills. We do need innovation in how we attract those skills, particularly in a context where there's fiscal constraints and the bureaucratic constraints. But there are a number of initiatives that we've briefed Parliament on before on how we're going to get there. But certainly, we don't have all the skills we need for these cases, and we need to find innovative ways. And I'll come to how that the committee can support us. The question was asked about tenure, security of tenure, and it's a really important one. I think one of the challenges we've had with the ID, as I said to the media briefing, was it was set up as a temporary structure under a proclamation within a less than perfect legal architecture and within the spirit with the bureaucratic constraints. So what we've tried to do is move ahead with the creation moving ahead with an organizational design program where we can bring permanence to the ID, especially as we transition from the Zondo resources. And just to give you some numbers, of the 120 staff members or capacity that the ID currently has, we will be looking at expanding that to 200 by the end of next year. And of those, approximately more than 50 will be hopefully on the permanent structure. We haven't finalized the organizational design process, and the ID will still need to sign off on that, but we're aiming to do that by March. And that will create some of the stability that's needed that the honorable colleague referred to in terms of security of tenure. We are going to be bringing across about 23 digital forensic capacities, 6 investigators and 6 team leaders from Zondo that will be part of this organizational design process. The question of the dire skills in the public sector is also a key one. And this is something which we do need to look at in terms of how we engage with the private sector. This is politically fraught. And of course, we need to make sure that the independence of the NPA remains intact. But it is something that many advanced prosecution services are doing, and we have to make progress on it. It speaks to the president's Tumamina call and how we engage with the private sector in terms of bringing those skills and those capacities into these cases, but without creating a perception of influence or an actual influence. The Zondo transition in terms of the lab, just to make the point that there are extensive progress made on this, but it has been a bit tricky because obviously the unpredictable nature of the extension of the Zondo Commission has meant that this process has been delayed at very short notice. But we now know that at the end of December, it's wrapping up. And as the minister said, that the digital forensic lab will be transitioning to the Department of Justice, and there's an engagement with National Treasury on this. The new ID building has space for the relevant hardware, and we have started the training of the colleagues in terms of how to use this digital forensic lab. So just to end briefly, Chair, on the question was asked, what can the committee do to support? I'll just raise 3 areas. I think the first one is speaks to the complexity of these crimes. We are going to need support in terms of how we go about broader engagement with the private sector, broader engagement within the government departments, and that the Portfolio Committee can really assist us with that, because it's a delicate balance and it's something that needs to be managed very carefully, but your support would be very welcome. The second is the question of budget. Of course, we know that the NPA will always need more resources and more funding, and the committee has done well in supporting us. But moving forward, we certainly going to be looking to the committee to make sure that we have the required budget to deal with these kinds of cases. And then the third and final point, Chair, is the question of the broader criminal justice system and the reform and the improvement that's needed there. The NPA is only as strong as its weakest link within the criminal justice system. And it's not just the NPA that needs capacity and skills and resources. It's also our partners within the system, particularly the police and the Hawks, but others as well. We need to fix the system as a whole. It's no point just fixing the NPA or one of them. We need to fix it as a whole. Otherwise, the system together won't work effectively. And it's really an important point that I think this committee can engage with other relevant committees to make sure that that broader reform happens. Chair, the last first point that was raised was on the question of the salary discrepancy between prosecutors. It is an outstanding, long-standing issue that has to be resolved. It is causing a major problem with staff morale. We've just recently got the Supreme Court of Appeal judgment on this, and we've started a very focused initiative to address this over the coming months. We look forward to the committee's support on it. We're engaging closely with the minister on it, and we're hoping to be able to deal with a salary dispensation to sort this long-standing issue out once and for all as quickly as possible, because it is a major factor undermining our morale at this stage. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. And just picking up on what Advocate Duplessis has just said on that issue, we have set up a task team with representatives from all the DPP offices from the affected group to look at various options for possible dispensations for the level of deputy director as well as chief prosecutors, and to come up with other new options and to then make very firm proposals to the minister to deal with this untenable situation. And so we hopefully we will have the support of the committee. I also want to ask the support of the committee with regard to non-trial resolutions that might be a little bit controversial in some circles, but they're not. They're used in prosecution services to deal expeditiously with matters and to bring back the money quicker. And we also, the one issue of legislative changes to strengthen the fight against corruption. We have been calling for changes to the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, POCA, for a long time. It needs changes. We have been engaging with the Department of Justice, but I think that needs to be put at the top of the legislative program. And I'm a bit concerned that this is being, that is not the case, but I need to engage more with the DG of Justice as well as the Minister to make sure that amendments to POCA are put at the top and that we move with those amendments. The other issue, there are amendments to the Legal Practice Act that are being proposed and the process is ongoing. The NPA had made various proposals before the final draft moved on to the next stage. Regrettably, many of those proposals have not been taken into account, and we need to now engage in the normal process of consultations moving forward. So the NPA will have a lot of comments in that more broader consultation process, and we certainly hope that we will have the support of the committee in that regard as well. Chair, just in a final few issues that perhaps were not covered, on the prioritization issue that was raised by one of the honourable members, it's absolutely correct. In fact, that is what I mentioned at the media briefing on Monday, that we need to make sure, and even in the ID, that we are very, very clear in terms of our prioritization of matters. It cannot be that everything's a priority. We have to prioritize specific cases. As Advocate Rabaji said, they've done well in asset forfeiture over the years, but now we need to really hone in to the prosecution side of it and to really make sure that we prioritize what impact we may not always be able to get after the big fish, but then there will be smaller cases that we need to look at in terms of what is the case strategy to deal with the big elephant and what's the most the best way to tackle it. The issue of the Eastern Cape prosecutors that was raised, or before I get to that, the issue of percentage of cases in the FCCU, and we'll need to look at sending, I don't know if we have statistics about this, but I will speak to Advocate Cock, and if we can deal with that, maybe by way of a written response, and also in terms of the efforts to increase the capacity in the SCCU. There's a lot of work that's being done in that regard, both in terms of numbers as well as in terms of skills development. The issue of the Eastern Cape matter, we sent a report to the portfolio committee chair. I think it was about 2 weeks or so ago. There is a task team that's been set up to deal with this issue. We've had an investigation, but it still seems that this matter is continuing. And so the recently appointed DPP advocate, Mr. Barry Madolo, who is the DPP in Mthatha area, we've now asked him to also manage this part of the Eastern Cape, the so-called the Grahamstown division, because we felt that we needed a permanent DPP who is permanently appointed and not the acting DPPs in order to ensure that he is able to deal better with the situation. So Mr. Madolo is working closely with the affected parties, managers, as well as prosecutors, and we're hoping to see some progress in that regard. I agree, it's just not, it's untenable that you have managers and prosecutors that are litigating in court. So I'm hoping that Mr. Madolo will be able to assist in that regard. The issue of DPP posts, I agree. These are presidential appointments, and this is part of strengthening the NPA. And I agree this has taken longer than it should have. And we are in the process. We have engaged on a process. And I'm hoping that before the end of this year, we will be able to send recommendations to the minister for all of the outstanding outstanding DPP as well as special director positions, and that those appointments will be fast-tracked through to the president and in the early part of next year, that we should have all DPPs permanently appointed. The issue of, I just want to make sure I cover all the issues. I think that one issue about the appointment, the person who will succeed Advocate Cronier, and I think it was Honorable Jele who said that she certainly hopes that it will be a woman who will replace Advocate Cronier. What I can say is that we will ensure that we replace her with the best person who has the skills, who has the ability to do this work, and in all probability it will be a woman. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister.
Afternoon, Chair and members. No, I just wanted to respond to one question that was raised by Honourable Hendricks to the Minister at when the Minister was here. The minister did respond to it about, and that was the issue of, was there a secret deal between the National Party and the African National Congress on amnesty? The minister did respond to it by saying he had no knowledge of that. And I just wanted to add to it that I'm also unaware of it, never heard of it until it started surfacing more recently. What I am aware about is that during the negotiations, there was and I think it was in the multi-party negotiations, so it was something on public record. The National Party wanted a blanket amnesty, which the African National Congress opposed and rejected, supporting instead a specific amnesty for each crime, as is what was ultimately in the Truth and Reconciliation process. The other thing to say on this is that, yes, there haven't been many prosecutions, but there was one very high-profile prosecution just after the TRC process, and that was the former Minister of Police, and if I recall correctly, the former Commissioner of Police, who were charged with the attempted murder of the Reverend Frank Shikane. Now, they were then convicted. I think it was a plea and sentencing agreement with the NPA, but they were found guilty. Now, if there had been such secret agreement, I'm surprised that neither of them raised that issue to stop being prosecuted. So to me, that's evidence that there wasn't an agreement. Chair, I just wanted to add that point. Thank you. I don't know if you there were no other questions to me, so I just wanted to respond to that point. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. NDPP, have all your people answered all the questions? NDPP?
Sorry, Chair, we've checked. It seems like we have covered all the questions. I'm not sure if there's anything further that the committee would like from us.
Okay. Honorable Ngola, is that a legacy hand or a new hand?
From me, Chair.
Honorable Ngola?
Yes, Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
No, it's a new hand, Chair.
It's a new hand?
Yes.
Okay, proceed.
Yes, Chair, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the response we're getting from NPA as it relates to the matter of the 2nd December is that they could not complete investigation within that period of the 2nd December. And required more time to actually deal and proceed with investigation.
We can't hear you at all, Honorable Mola. No, we can't hear you.
It's better now.
No, walk around that tree.
He will. He must water the tree.
Let's walk around it.
Can you hear me now?
A little bit better, but continue.
How is it now?
No, very bad. Your line is very.
They could not complete investigation.
It is worse.
I will write on the chat. It looks like
no, Honorable Mola, we can't hear you. We can't hear you.
All right, sir, I'm right on this. I'm right.
Maybe you must write it on the chat.
I'm saying I'll write on the chat, Chair. It looks
write it on the chat.
No problems.
Okay, write it on the chat.
Yes, I will, Chair.
Okay. I think Honorable Ngola is the only one. We'll just give him a minute to write on the chat, so that the NDPP and her team can respond, and then we move towards closing the meeting. But as a matter of interest, the NDPP, there seems to be generally within the entities that we oversight, with the NPA included, there seems to be a lack of investment in succession planning. And that is why it takes so long to fill positions once people resign, how are you going to be dealing with that issue? Because part of sustaining an organization is to ensure that there is succession planning.
Chair, I agree with you that I don't think government has a culture of succession planning. And that's a problem in government. And understanding as well that, look, what we are doing is because we are really trying to increase the number of particularly Black African women in the organization. We are certainly trying to deal with preparing, promoting them within the organization. But as I've explained previously, prosecutors, particularly those of previously disadvantaged, they become very attractive to other entities outside of government and outside of the NPA. And we lose them very quickly. And so that has been one of, because at the highest level, I mean, I send recommendations to the minister for deputy director of public prosecutions, the chief prosecutors, and very often they are African men. And the minister comes back to me and says, you know, where are the women? And I say to him, these are the challenges we're having. So I think the culture of succession planning is not there. And besides, they're very stringent, you know, recruitment requirements, and these are presidential appointments. So I agree with you. There needs to be a clear understanding of how we can prepare for proper successful succession planning, particularly when we want to promote and encourage previously disadvantaged people that actually get taken away from the organization very, very quickly, particularly women. So it is a challenge, and we're trying to deal with it, but it's not an easy issue. I have raised this with the minister as well.
Okay. Honorable Ngola has raised some issues on the chat. Can we give you a minute to go through them so that you can respond to what has been raised?
Sorry, Chair, I'm trying to.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. We've read that, the question. We are going to engage with the prosecutors and the investigators. And as I said, Advocate Madolo is engaging with the investigator of the family very, very soon. And we'll be able to get an assessment of what is outstanding. And then we would be able to in writing, communicate with the committee in terms of what are the possible deliverables. But I do want to say that in the TRC cases, as hard as we are trying, and we will continue to work with the families and with the legal representatives, as Advocate de Kock stressed, because that is really important. The NPA is victim-centered. I mean, the families are our, you know, primary clients, and we need to work very, very closely with them. We are trying to bring justice for the family, and that is why it's hugely important for us to engage with them. But the reality is that in many of these cases, there probably won't be prosecutions because of various challenges, but we will make sure that we are able to, as fast as we can, and we will try to give some kind of indication of timelines, which is might be tricky, but we'll try. We will try to ensure that we do whatever we can to get these cases to court. There was another question by one of the honorable members that now comes to mind about are we focusing on those issues that are those cases where families with means are actually going to are putting pressure on us, and therefore we're only dealing with that case? I want to assure the committee that that is not the case. In fact, they are when we dealt with the matters of the deaths in detention as an example, there were some very high profile deaths in detention of Mr. Agate Hafaji that was actually in the media. But from our perspective, we went and looked at all, I think, I don't have the figures now, but I think it's around 69 We pulled all of those matters out. And in fact, the Dipale case was a matter that was then joined with the Agate. I hope I have my facts right. I'm just speaking top of my head. I don't have. So that was joined with one of the, I think it was the Agate inquest, because we found that Mr. Dipale had actually died around the same time. He was in detention the same time. He was interrogated by, and we realized that these two inquests should be joined together and dealt with. So that is the kind of efforts we're making to ensure that it's all not only families with means that have can get lawyers to put pressure on the NPA that we are working with, but we're really trying to deal with as many as of all the cases in a strategic way, prioritizing depending on the resources. But it's certainly we want to look at all of this case, in particular perhaps those that do not have the resources to actually deal with this. And just on the issue of the Cradock 4 matter, it's the 13th of December is the case that we have to file an answering affidavit, which we will do, and they will obviously there will be more information as a result of that. So I really want to highlight, Chair, that you know we do want to collaborate. I can understand perhaps that families were driven to you know litigate, but we need to collaborate, and let's try to you know move away from litigation and really work hard to work together and make sure that there's justice for the victims and families of the TRC matters of apartheid era atrocities. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think let's start by wishing Advocate Grenier all the best on her new endeavors. We thank her for the work that she has done in the public service, and hopefully we will continue working with her in the near future. But we wish her all the best in her new endeavors. Deputy Minister, on the issue of POCA amendments, I think it would be important that we can get timelines as to when are you going to be done with those amendments, and possibly when are they going to be presented before the committee. I would link that with an urgent meeting that Honorable Janji proposed, that we need timelines, and that will be linked with what Honorable Jele raised, that the issue of the TRC cases, we need to approach them as we are approaching the issue of the issue of the one that we always meet with yourself, SIU and the Hawks. We will need to meet on a quarterly basis to get updates on the progress you are making on the TRC cases. We know that those cases, as we have said before, that each day that gets by, it becomes much more difficult to prosecute them. So we are under a lot of, in fact, they make us very anxious, because if we look at the question we must ask ourselves is whether all of us, we are in line with the preamble of the Constitution, which says, we, the people of South Africa, recognize the injustice of our past, honor those who suffered for justice and freedom in our land. The question that we should all ask ourselves is whether we have met that threshold in dealing with those that died in the pursuit of our democracy, in pursuit of our democracy. And the answer is a very painful no. The answer is a very painful no. We are able to meet now and have discussions and make you accountable under a normal society, sort of, because of their contributions. the fact that their families have even have to pay extra to get private investigators, in addition to the sacrifice that they've already made. Surely we can't say we are in line with the preamble of our constitution. So I think the firm view is that we, from now on going forward, we will need to meet quarterly to get progress reports from your side. We would also, in the beginning of the year, would like to meet with the minister to get progress reports with regard to the appointment of the judge, because he has promised us that by the end of the year, the judge would be appointed, the retired judge would be appointed. It would be important that when we start the year, we should get progress reports as to, in fact, we expect that that judge by that time would have been appointed. So by the 25th of January, we expect a return response from the minister when we come back on the 25th of January as to who the name of the judge is. And we also would like to get clear timelines from the minister. Hopefully he is going to ensure that the president does appoint the remaining directors of public prosecutions, provincial directors of public prosecutions. We are not a committee that believes in endeavors. We are a committee that believes in project timelines, because we can't monitor endeavors. We want clear project timelines because we want, though, at least by June, we must not have a province without a provincial director of public prosecution, and all senior managers should be filled. We also expect by March that you would give us a paper on the issue of non-trial resolutions, because we don't want to agree to something that we do not understand in full detail. That should be, at least we have a draft so that we can engage with that, a draft. I think one of the issues is, I think also is between the NPA and the ministry. Besides poker, what